if I'm not willing to do it myself. And so that's what I'm doing. I was asked to participate in this thing. A certain amount of trust was involved in it, and I'm going to go do it. So that means Tuesday nights are reruns for a while. But anyway, that's where I was last night, and that's where I'll be for a bunch of coming Tuesdays. It's unavoidable. At any rate, I'm here tonight. I am here tonight, and you are there. So I think we should have about 2 hours and 57 minutes of some darn fine conversation. At least I hope we do. This is The Horn, America's liberal voice. You know that. I'm Bob Kincaid. Most of you know that, unless you're new to the program. And if you are new to the program, just kind of strap in and hang on, and you'll get the hang of things sooner or later. Trust me. I promise. Now, with that in mind, it's Wednesday. And, of course, Wednesday is always the middle of the week. Wednesday is always downhill to Friday. Wednesday is always hump day. Oh, but brethren and sistren, you know, because, well, some things just have to be. Wednesday is, yes, hallelujah, glory, somebody pass me a snake, prayer meeting on the horn. Hallelujah, hallelujah, hallelujah. Oh, Mr. Minister of Music, brother, if you would just come up and lead us in our offertory hymn, if you please. And a gentle reminder, brethren and sistren, your contributions at this point to the horn, given what fundraising has been for the month, would be like a drop of rain on a desert. It'll just... But Lord, don't we need those drops of rain? Don't we need those drops of rain? Still looking for the full contingent of the thrifty 250. 250 folks willing to contribute $10, a wee mere $10 per month, in order for this programming enterprise, this effort to survive and to continue. Because that's a portion of what it takes. A portion of what it takes. So as the hymn is sung and the plate comes around, if you would be so kind as to use your virtual collection plate, going over to headonradionetwork.com, clicking the Contribute tab, and signing up for a $10 a month contribution, subscription, whatever you care to call it, just to keep the horn going. And just as a gentle reminder for those interested in doing the math, that works out to being about, less than a nickel an hour for this entire program. A media bargain if ever there was one. So, Brother Minister of Music, if you would fire up the choir, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! No, I wasn't late to the microphone. I was just seeing if you were paying attention. No, I was late to the microphone. You know how that... Well, no, you don't know how that goes. Neither do I. I'm ashamed of myself, okay? I just am. Maybe I should just close up shop and go home. No, I'm not going to do that either because it's been a short week anywho. This is our, it's Thursday, but for all intents and purposes, it's the Friday show because I have been engaged all day long in, as a friend of mine who didn't have the best command of the language once put it, making preservations for cooking some chili. There's a couple of pork shoulders and a couple of briskets merrily smoking away on the smoker. The pork is for the green chili. The shoulder, the brisket is for the red chili. What else? The dried New Mexico chili peppers are rehydrating in boiling water. They will be reduced to magnificent chili sauce later in the evening after the program. I've even got poblano peppers that I have to roast and de-skin. Oh, I've got a lot of work to do. There's a lot going on around here. But the most important thing is getting the show on the air because, well, with all that going on, I won't be here tomorrow. I won't be here tomorrow night. Tomorrow night being Friday night, the 15th of October. I won't be here. Oh, yeah, there's got, yeah, absolutely, Lottie. There'll be beans in it. Absolutely, there'll be beans. In fact, lots of beans. They're soaking. They were soaking. Now they are slowly cooking. Even as we speak, this is from scratch stuff. I mean, we're talking about the de-skinning and seeding tomatoes, and I mean, this is chili from the ground up. I've got tomatillos yet to roast to go with the poblanos for the salsa verde for the puerco. Is that the word, puerco? Spanish pork? Pig? I don't know. I don't speak Spanish. I'm just making it up as I go along. It's all going to be right tasty. Yeah, Sparky. Oh, here we go. Spanish food porn. No, Mexican food porn. Chile is a Nahuatl word. It's not a Spanish word. Chile is a Nahuatl word. After all, a pepper, what we think of as a bell pepper or a chili pepper, those aren't peppers. Peppers are little hard black things, but when the Spaniards conquered Mexico, they had never had anything quite that fiery in their mouths before, and the only thing they could compare it to was the heat from a black peppercorn. Oh, didn't they have some growing up to do, those Spanish conquistadores, as they committed their genocide. But everybody loves chili, and so there's a little chili fest thing for Bridge Day, because Saturday is Bridge Day. There will be people, literally, probably over 1,000 over the course of the day, at least a few hundred, who will step to the edge of the New River Gorge Bridge as it spans the eponymously named New River Gorge, and they will leap 876 feet with a parachute strapped to their back, where they will land in the very much frigid New River, hopefully, or hopefully not the trees, or perhaps the sandy beach landing area. That's Bridge Day. Now, never, ever go to Bridge Day if you suffer in the least from closet phobia or claustrophobia. Because, you know what's creepy? Being on two lanes of a four-lane interstate bridge 876 feet above a canyon with 100,000 other people. No, really, I'm not claustrophobic. For me, it even gets a little close. But that's the thing. I live on one side of the river. The chili business is on the other side of the river, and that means that if I want to be there for it on Saturday because they closed down the bridge, I have to go Friday night and stay with friends in order to be there to finish off the chili and make sure that everything... Because, you know, it'll be served with all the lovely little sides, maybe some tortilla chips, a little bit of, you know, a little bit of sour cream, a little bit of maybe some shredded cheese, maybe some extremely finely diced onion. And yes, I know, I'm sitting here busting my hump on this chili from scratch, which I know, somebody, some idiot with a John Racy button on, or maybe a I like Sarah Palin button, will get him a little cup of it and taste it and say, look over there. Well, Marvelline, I think I like the Hormel better. This here's spicy. Because this will be spicy. I see no point in making chili that doesn't have some hellfire and brimstone to it. Although, to be fair, because the I think I mentioned that the First Holiness Apostolic Anabaptist Herpetological Sanctuary and Temple of Holiness, whatever, they came to the city council meeting and said, "We can't be having none of that demon beer being served with the chili. That'll unleash Satan all over the streets of our fair town." Now, what it would more likely unleash is a little bit more fun, but then again, the First Apostolic Holiness Anabaptist Temple and Herpetological Sanctuary doesn't like fun either, unless it involves, you know, polyester and hair done up to Jesus. But it's still going to be fun because the chili's going to be killer. So we'll have some here for the fam-damily, and we will take, you know, I'll probably take about 5 gallons of each to the other side of the river. Not the other side, like metaphysically. The other side of the river. So anyway, that's where I'm going to be tomorrow. Which means we will pick up with the action on Moran Monday. Moran Monday being the 18th of October? Yeah, the 18th of October. Special thanks go out to an individual who kindly contributed a substantial portion of money last night. It pushed us another chunk of the way toward where we need to be. We've gotten a couple more contributions in the last 24 hours, and we are all told about $200 closer than we were to begin with. But we are still, well, this is the 14th of October. Tomorrow will be the halfway point for all intents and purposes. And we are nowhere near $1,250, which is what the halfway point of the month would be. And, the fretful thing is that, you know, there are bills that get paid all along the way. And it takes your contributions to this effort that will be, good God, in this form, not just me on the radio, but in this form, this effort will be it'll be almost ready to go to first grade. We'll be in kindergarten come the 24th of October. We will be 5 years old, having premiered on October the 24th, 2005. Hard to imagine, isn't it? But we will be. And we've done it all with your determination. And that's what makes it, I'm sorry. No, I'm not sorry. If this is worthwhile, you contribute. If it's not, it goes away. Your choice. It's that simple. But yeah, we're nowhere near $1,250, which is where we're. So we technically should be for this time of year, or this time of the month rather. But we didn't get there last month either. So we struggle along, and some bills get paid, some bills don't get paid. Sweat. Computers that need to be rebuilt that can't be rebuilt, So cross your fingers, and thank you to those of you who do chip in and support. A $10 contribution per month, as noted, comes out to about less than 5 cents per hour of programming, and that includes every single person involved in this enterprise who doesn't get paid. I sat down and I had a conversation with Boss Man Wayne the other day. We don't get to get together as much as we would like, because he is a very, very busy man, and especially with this being election season, he is running hither, thither, and yon. And I stay fairly busy my own self. But we were talking about some of the things that, for, 3 years now we've been talking about going to video? But simply put, it would take a bigger pipe. It would take a bigger pipe in terms of internet bandwidth. Because I'm not going to do a static camera, because I don't have enough ego for me to think that I am that fascinating to look at. When we do this, we'll do it right. We will do it with multiple angles, and we will put up stuff on the screen so you can watch it along with me when we, when we run video, audio from video, that kind of thing. And we can't do it right now. We just can't. But if you can help out over at headonradionetwork.com, the button, it's a PayPal button under the tab Contribute. If you don't like PayPal, there is also a snail mail address there. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. See how simple that was? Well, it's all there, right, in writing at headonradionetwork.com. Under the term, contribute. Yes, the food porn has gotten us off and running this evening. Jim noting, chili with basil, cumin, chili powder, frozen red, yellow, and green bell peppers, and canned tomatoes, tomato sauce, and mushrooms. Well, I won the United States Air Force Chili Cook-Off in D.C., and by Jove, I bet that was some fine, fine stuff. See, there's something about chili that just gets people going. It's so convivial. You're standing there, you got that head sweat going, you got the ice cold bottle, glass, and mug of beer or iced tea, or well, no beer here, but it's social. You know what? Chili may be the absolutely most social food that there is, unless of course you're in Kentucky and having burgoo, which ain't bad neither. Wow. I can't wait to get back in there and get back at it. I'm so proud of the chili sauce, though, because those dried New Mexico peppers, rehydrated, and you run them through the Foley food mill. You know what a Foley food mill is, of course. Looks like a saucepan with a crank handle in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. And it yields this beautiful, dark, brick red sauce that is, it's got a wonderful chili taste to it, and on top of it, you know, there's the heat and the fire. Now here's the one thing I don't like: habanero peppers. I know they're hotter than blue blazes, but I don't like the way they taste. They are not the same species as, or maybe, I don't know, genus. No, genus before species or species before genus, I can't remember, but they're a different creature from your average chili pepper. A habanero is, I think, a chinensis. Whereas the others are not. And for me, a habanero has sort of an off-putting, sort of sweet, perfumey character to it that I just really don't like. Ron and Raleigh asking, hey, Bob, do you thicken your chili with masa or like I do with crushed tortilla chips? Beer as your liquid? There's some beer in it. Probably going to be some tequila in it, too. There's no way I'm going to make chili and take it over to be consumed, at least in part, by the First Pentecostal Holiness Apostolic Anabaptist and Herpetological Sanctuary without it's got some hot damn in it. So, you know, I leave the thickening to others. I like to let it simmer until it gets its own thickness. The other trick is, and I don't do this all the time, this is only for special occasions, instead of hamburger, using smoked brisket. And then you take the drippings off the brisket, and you use that as part of the chili base, too, that wonderful beef broth with all the spices and yum. And then, the brisket's kind of stringy, and it just provides a body that you can't get from a hamburger. Wow, how did I get started on this? Isn't this supposed to be a serious program? Well, we're going to get serious, I assure you. You know, last night, we talked about a couple of First Amendment cases, one that made it to the Supreme Court and another that didn't, and pointed out the dichotomy between the two. On the one hand, the Supreme Court was willing to take the case and hear the case concerning the virulent, vicious, hate-infested gutter dribblings of the Westboro Baptist Church. You recall. What did the Supreme Court refuse to hear? Why they refused to hear the case of a couple of liberals who were denied entrance to a publicly funded the George Bush event in Colorado. The only difference being that one was the religion industry and one was not. Well, I have one more, I guess sort of the rubber match case. This will probably find its way to the Supreme Court sooner or later. It's presently in the ninth... I used to speak for a living. It's presently in the Ninth United States Circuit Court of Appeals. And it's been filed by Americans United. I believe it was our dear friend Jude in Seattle who sent this along. And this is fit to make you scream. This concerns one of one of those people who is, the, shall we say, fragile within our society. By that I mean this individual had run afoul of the law, at which point one's rights become negligible, if at all. The woman's name is Janine Cowles, C-O-W-L-E-S. Janine Cowles was gotten dragged into the court system. She ran afoul of the law some way, living while poor, one of those type infractions. And she was given an alternative sentence. Well, that sounds humane, doesn't it? Well, it does. It sounds humane. It's not the theory. It's the application that begins to sting. Janine Cowles was given the choice of either going back to the Ada County Jail in Idaho, or she could go into what was called a discipleship recovery program at the Boise Rescue Mission. Well, come on. Who wants to stay in the stir for a year if you can go to the homeless the discipleship recovery program? Right? Well, she chose, I'll go to the discipleship recovery program. It involves probation and sort of, it's like a halfway house, that kind of thing. There's only one problem. She went into the discipleship recovery program of the Boise Rescue Mission. But after being exposed to the discipleship recovery program, there's no evidence that said that she was mean, or that she would sit in their little the church meetings and holler, "Hail Satan," or anything like that. No. It's another one of those miserable cases where a human being gets trapped in the system on a drug charge. And she went to this recovery program and was trying to recover. There's only one problem. She refused to convert to Pentecostal Christianity. You know what I said about the hair done up to the Jesus, done up to Jesus, and the polyester and everything, and the Happy Goodman family. Yeah, she didn't want to be a Pentecostal Christian. You know, floor rolling, strychnine swigging, serpent handling. I've got a serpent story later. And most of all, when they argue that she didn't want to spend her life, she didn't want to spend her life, I don't know, listening to the likes of this. I mean, don't you love that? Yeah, sure, that's the Happy Goodman family. There's nothing quite like the Happy Goodman family. Hey, they got a horn section. That's a righteous bass player. And I do mean righteous. Self-righteous even. Yeah, there's only one problem. Janine Cowles wasn't almost home. She got stuck back in the stir. She failed to convert to Pentecostal Christianity, and they sent her back to jail. And she has, she and the Intermountain Fair Housing Council have sued the mission for religious discrimination. Here's the fun part. It's a federal case. She made a federal case of it. It's a federal case. It was filed first, of course, in the United States District Court for whatever district handles Boise, Idaho, which falls within the 9th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. And this is the part where you get to scream. The U.S. District Court dismissed her case. Bear in mind, remember, she was told, convert or go back to jail. You know, Jesus, at least the Quran says there can be no compulsion, no coercion in religion. Not so much the Prince of Peace, I guess. Convert or go back to jail. I guess it's better than convert or die, but that's probably because, you know, they felt like somebody might be watching. And the United States District Court dismissed her case and said that the mission's ejection of Cowles from its residence... What did I say last night? What have I said? Time after time after time after time. The First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States in this country has no longer anything whatsoever to do with free speech. Or freedom of religion, unless your religion is what the religion industry wants it to be. In short, the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States of America is no longer anything but a life support system for the religion industry. The district court ruled that the Fair Housing Act, the Federal Fair Housing Act, cannot be applied to the Boise Rescue Mission because it would violate their freedom of religion. Janine Cowles had no free exercise of religion. She could not reject their dummied-up, ginned-up, faked-up, rubed-up, frauded-up, fundamentalist, floor-rolling, strychnine-drinking, snake-handling, tongue-speaking fundamentalism. She was not free to reject that if she wished to remain out of jail. The church, however, was free to reject her for simply wanting to peaceably participate in the program without getting half-drowned by some idiot with a snake in his hands. Now, here's the fun part. Here's the, what do they say in carnival speak? Here's the blow-off. The Discipleship and Recovery Program of the Boise Rescue Mission, by their own admission, depends heavily upon the state of Idaho for participants and in return provides the state with a free residential program. That kind of makes the Boise Rescue Mission an agent of the state, doesn't it? And when the court says, thou shalt go ye therefore, or go back to jail, well, that contains an element of state sponsorship and sanction as well, doesn't it? It's moments like this that I'm awfully glad for Americans United and their executive director, the Reverend Barry W. Lynn. But I have to be candid when I say that I don't have a lot of hope for the outcome of the case. Because this is just one in a line of cases. You may recall a couple of years ago, a girl who had been physically abused in an exorcism ceremony by a fundamentalist church in Texas She had been physically harmed. She had had the civil torts of battery committed against her and assault. And she sued the church, and the Texas State Supreme Court said, nope, can't sue them. If we allowed you to sue the church for damages, you'd be violating the church's First Amendment rights. See, that's the thing. Because the First Amendment has been reduced to little more than a shadow of itself and nothing more than a life support system for the religion industry, the courts have lost sight of the fact that things like the First Amendment are individual, even the Second Amendment, they are individual rights. No person, time and again, no person, Congress shall make no law affecting the endorsing a religion or limiting the free exercise thereof. Who exercises a right to freedom of religion? An individual does, not a church. Well, not everybody hated the Happy Goodman family, Ron and Raleigh, noting, hey, Bob, that's a hell of a lot better than Lady Antebellum. I'm not sure if her, if they're claiming that the church had a right to throw her out because she volunteered for the program. But I wouldn't be surprised if that's part of the argument somewhere down the road. Well, you know, she didn't have no rights. We got the right to tell her who, where to go, and when we say froggy, all she has to do is say how high, or it's back in the box. What we have here is failure to communicate. What a heck of a place to have to start, huh? That is where we start. And it kind of goes downhill from there. You know, being forced to be a fundamentalist and believe things like the earth is younger than the written recipe for bread, that kind of thing, that's a form of torture. Or perhaps it's a simile for torture. But then there's the actual stuff. And I strongly urge you to keep your eye on the work of Jason Leopold and Jeffrey Kay over at Truthout as it develops. Come tomorrow. It's my understanding they'll be delivering, they'll be doing a press release and a presser, I think, in Berkeley, on some recent investigative journalism. God bless them for doing it. Dog bless them for doing it. Flying spaghetti monster, bless them for... No, nothing. Bless them for doing it. But blessings upon them. Wolfowitz directive... This is the headline at Truthout. Wolfowitz directive gave legal cover to detainee experimentation program. And you say, well, Bob, that's kind of an odd segue from First Amendment religious liberty to... Paul Wolfowitz and torture? Is it really? Is that really that hard an edit? Because I don't think it is. Because both of these stories involve cases of the law being bent and twisted so out of its own fashion that it is no longer resemblant to what it was originally meant to be. Of course, that requires some activist judges, but we all have to understand that when a right-winger does it, it's not activism. It's just returning our country to God. Or protecting the homeland. Wolfowitz directive, you remember Paul Wolfowitz, right? Remember Fahrenheit 9/11 when he, yeah, I'm going to ruin your dinner, when he sticks his pocket comb in his mouth and gets it good and spitty and combs his hair? A little dabble, do you? Yeah, Wolfowitz directive gave legal cover to detainee experimentation program. Didn't Secretary of State Hillary Clinton just get done apologizing to Guatemala for us having experimented on them by, among other things, pouring beakers of syphilis germs on mentally incapacitated and otherwise incarcerated Guatemalans' penises? Remember that? Yeah, I do too. Well, guess what? Nothing's changed. This goes back to 2002, yea, verily, 8 long years ago, but let's not be looking back. Yeah, let's do. What Jason Leopold and Jeffrey Kay report for Truth Out is that in 2002, as the Bush administration was turning to torture and other brutal techniques for interrogating war on terror detainees, Deputy Defense Secretary and Comlicker Paul Wolfowitz loosened rules. How did he do that? You usually, if a law is a law, you don't get to just change it on your own. But, well, if you're a loyal Bushy, all things are accomplishable for them that love the Bush. Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz loosened rules against human experimentation. You know what? I'm going to go back and play the intro again to the whole show and just start. What? I just want to turn the mic off and walk away and just. I want to go roll in the grass and speak in tongues for a little bit. Just what must it be like to be Jeffrey Kay and or Jason Leopold, and you're sitting there, you know, clacking along. You hear the clacking? You're sitting there clacking along at your keyboard, and what you realize you're typing is that Paul Wolfowitz loosened rules against human experimentation. Kind of makes you think that whole Nuremberg exercise was for naught. Human experimentation? Us? We the United? Yes, us, we the United States. My country, love it or leave it. An apparent recognition of legal problems regarding the novel strategies for extracting and evaluating information from the prisoners. It wasn't just torture. It was Mengele-esque human experimentation. Memo to President Obama. Sometimes you have to look back. Sometimes you have to ask your Justice Department to actually get in the justice business. More on that later. The title of what Wolfowitz did, this directive, Protection of Human Subjects and Adherence to Ethical Standards in DOD-Supported Research. This is another one of those moments, and we're just finding out about it, but this is another one of those moments. You remember the Clear Skies Initiative that made for better air by putting more pollution in it? You remember the Healthy Forests Initiative that made for better forests by chopping forests down? This is another one of those. Protection of human subjects and adherence to ethical standards in DOD-supported research. And what it did is it weakened protections that had been in place, as Leopold and Kay write, protections that have been in place for decades by limiting the safeguards to prisoners of war. That's why they were retitled enemy combatants. In one of those great phrases that should go down in history if we were actually serious about our history and should be put right there alongside William Westmoreland saying, these Vietnamese people don't cherish life the way we do. What Wolfowitz said in his screed was, quote, we're dealing with a special breed of person here. He said that right before he signed the new directive. I don't think it's in the body of the work. We're dealing with a special breed of person here. You know what? As human beings, there's a problem. There's no such thing as a breed of human beings. You either are one, or you are not one. And generally speaking, the delineation for human being is pretty specific. We are actually fairly, no matter the fact that there are some several billion of us now, we are fairly unique upon the planet. I didn't say we're good. I didn't say we were special. I just said that we're unique. It's not hard to tell what a member of the human species is. And the people at Guantanamo, no matter what sort of ill intent was ascribed to them by the loyal Bushies, were still human beings. Despite the words of Paul Wolfowitz, special breed of person. Well, my goodness, if you're a special breed of person, you might be a subhuman, mightn't you? You might be quasi-human, semi-human, almost human. Special breed. Special breed. you know, if you're concerned with breeds, that generally implies that you are concerned with controlling reproduction, living and dying, traits, attributes. Former Pentagon official described Wolfowitz's directive as providing legal cover for a top-secret special access program at Guantanamo Bay. And the program experimenting. You know, human beings and experimenting, for some reason or other, just doesn't work well for me. Experimenting on ways to glean information from unwilling subjects and to achieve deception detection. They were trying to figure out if they were being lied to. You know who has a harder time telling whether they're being lied to or not? People who are liars in the first place. Isn't that true? Haven't you observed that to be the case in your own lives? If you go through your life being honest with others, you can generally tell when someone's not being honest with you. If, however, you are a liar in the first place, you have become so divorced from what is factually true that you can't tell it when it's coming back at you. A dozen high-value detainees were subjected to interrogation methods in order to evaluate their reaction to those methods and the subsequent levels of stress that would result. Between April and July 2003, someone called a physiological warfare specialist, who was attached to the military's Survival, Evasion, Resistance, and Escape SEER program, was on site at Guantanamo, and that instructor was assigned to a top secret special access program. The experimental elements of the program included incredible brutality, sequencing and duration, examinations of sequencing and duration of torture. It was, of course, all designed to shield Donald Rumsfeld and George Bush. And it was specifically designed to evade the Nuremberg directives for human experimentation. Because the Wolfowitz directive changed the language that had required the Department of Defense researchers to adhere to the Nuremberg directives for human experimentation. Among other things, the Nuremberg Code requires the voluntary consent of the human subject. It describes that voluntary consent as being absolutely essential. Not according to Paul Wolfowitz. Researchers were simply made told to be familiar. Familiar with its contents. You want to scream? You want to holler? You want to carry on? You're free to. Makes me ill. Somewhere between crying, screaming, and an absolute boiling urge that justice be done the likes of Rumsfeld and Wolfowitz and Bush. Perhaps they need be taken to Nuremberg and have the tribunal re-impaneled and have it explained to them in minute detail again. The one silly question anybody seen this in the for-profit media? Truth Out is, by definition, not for-profit. Has anyone seen any detailed coverage of this in the for-profit media? Because I haven't. And I don't expect to. Among other things, the research and experimentation examined physiological markers of stress, such as elevation or depression of cortisol levels. Psychologists under contract to the CIA and the military, who were experts in the field, were also used. They took salivary swabs and blood samples in order to measure the cortisol. All this involved things like a draft exploitation plan. It goes on and on. There was an experiment on an individual named Al-Qahtani. Muhammad Al-Qahtani. He was captured in January 2002. Leopold and Kay write that a sworn statement filed by Lieutenant General Randall M. Schmidt, Al-Qahtani's attorney, said Secretary Rumsfeld was personally involved in the interrogation of Al-Qahtani and spoke weekly with Major General Miller, commander at Guantanamo, about the status of the interrogation between late 2002 and early 2003. There is an 84-page torture log relating to the case of Mr. Al-Qahtani. Beginning in November 2002 and continuing well into January 2003, Mr. Al-Qahtani was subjected to sleep deprivation, interrogated in 20-hour stretches, poked with IVs, and left to urinate on himself. My friends, it's nothing more than happens in an ordinary fraternity prank. Here's the smoking gun. It turns out that Mr. Al-Qahtani's torture was carried on over a period of months based on both written and verbal authorizations from Donald Rumsfeld. Mr. Al-Qahtani, they even had a name for what they did to him. He was tortured according to the first special interrogation plan. Now, what was in that first special interrogation plan that went on for months? 48 days of severe sleep deprivation, 20-hour investigations, forced nudity, sexual humiliation, religious humiliation, physical force, prolonged stress positions, and prolonged sensory overstimulation. Sensory overstimulation, that's when you're blaring the theme song from Barney at 130 decibels into a man's cell. Or Iron Maiden, Quiet Riot. Too bad Lady Antebellum wasn't around. And he was subjected to threats with military dogs. Here's a real knee slapper. Mr. Al-Qahtani's treatment was viewed as a model for other interrogations. No one's been tried for this. Not Wolfowitz. Not Rumsfeld. And not any individual responsible for any of it. Not a soul. And guess what? There hasn't been a prosecutable case arise out of any of it. That's the thing. We're dealing with psychopaths who had the reins of government. And they did it. Oh, they called it their patriotic duty. But they did it because it got them off. They did it for sport. They did it for vengeance. They did it for fun. And they couched it all in the terms of Americanism. Tough to stomach, isn't it? Ron and Raleigh writing, Hey, Bob, haven't you realized yet that those Geneva Convention rights are quaint? President can't help you, and his alleged Justice Department won't do diddly squat. Well, not where that's concerned. But there was late breaking news today that, in fact, the Department of Justice, the Obama administration Department of Justice, headed by Attorney General Eric Holder, would seek this day a halt, a stay of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell order, pending the Obama administration's appeal of Judge Virginia Phillips' opinion ordering the military to immediately suspend and discontinue any investigation or other proceedings to dismiss gay service members under Don't Ask, Don't Tell. An anonymous source speaking to the Associated Press said the process is back on track and that court papers seeking the stay will, not may, will be filed. And what's sadder, there's even more yet to come. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, there it is, and there you have it.
And what is that, Jim?
Just exactly what we're discussing last night.
They're going to do it.
Yeah, they're going to maintain Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and probably whenever you make an effort to change something like this, what eventually comes to the fore is something worse than what has been replaced and more oppressive. There's a reaction formation to it. But, you know, going back to these torture mechanisms and these experimentations on people, Bob, this has been going on for years. This has been going on to other, so many other isms and Americanisms. You know, it's so filled with that. It doesn't surprise me in the least, and it shouldn't surprise you. For example, in our own country, there is a book, and I'm sure you're familiar with the name Jessica Mitford, are you not?
I am.
The sister of Unity Mitford, the one who fell in love with Hitler and when war was declared shot herself in the Englischer Garten in Munich in 1939. So Unity was a Nazi and Jessica was a socialist. And Jessica Mitford, of course, went on to survive her sister and write two unusual books, the first of which was called Kind and Usual Punishment, using the American penal system as a means by drug companies of experimentation upon prisoners. You ever read that book, 1973?
No, I've only read about, not read.
You need to read it. There's a chapter in there, I think it's chapter 4, it's called Cheaper Than Chimpanzees, in which American pharmaceutical companies would experiment with drugs like Prolixin, for example, using psychotreatments, and they would give prisoners extra rations of cigarettes and candy and things of this nature. And they would use these mind-altering drugs and physically damaging drugs like Prolixin. Now, Prolixin is a very high-powered substance, and its use, they determined, causes deterioration of the femoral nerve sheath. Unspeakable agony. That's one of the contraindications of Prolixin. But they have used American prisoners as chimpanzees for years in our own penal systems. So all this is well founded and well based in the minds of certain agencies whose names I'm not going to call. And
no, we all know the names, I think.
And the usage of, I'll just refer to it as the hard details. And going back to the Nuremberg War Trials, in spite of what happened there, after they hanged those 11 defendants in 1947, you couldn't even get a story out about the Nuremberg War Trials. Nobody cared anymore. That really didn't last long. As a matter of fact, the most indication you'll ever have that ever occurred is the movie they made by, I can't remember who was the director of the movie, A Judgment in Nuremberg, the one with Montgomery Clift and
Spencer Tracy, and
of course the mother of Liza Minnelli, Judy Garland.
Right.
And people simply have a way of forgetting and just putting these things to the side. And as far as the excesses of these interrogators are concerned, they're not going to be prosecuted. They're going to be swept away. Just for example, like these atrocities in Afghanistan with these pictures of soldiers holding dead Afghans, all of a sudden the pictures have been orally withdrawn by CID. It's not going to come to the fore. It's going to be swept out of the rug. And I hate to say this.
Jim, do we dare ever hope that we the people get to demand some level of accountability?
Bob, the only thing I can say is this, and it's a quote from the Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam. And the moving finger writes, and having writ moves on, nor all thy piety, nor all thy wit, change a single word, nay cancel half a line. That's a fancy way of answering you. And I think you understand what answer I'm trying to give you.
Yeah, that's no.
Yeah, to me it means so. I've seen too much of it. It's not that I'm inured to it. It simply doesn't surprise me. And it makes me want to retreat further and further and further into my chamber nautilus. Hey, I'd rather talk about chili, wouldn't you?
Well, that sounds like a heck of a recipe you had.
Well, it's real simple. I mean, you know, it's not as involved as what you're doing. I mean, my God, yeah. What you're doing is you're just going ribbing from the ground up. But I found the basic elements of good chili are cumin, which is one of the oldest spices in the world, and, of course, basil, and, of course, just plain old ground-up chili powder, and the rest comes straight out of the grocery store, and you just put it together. And I guess I was lucky that day because a couple of four-star generals walked by, and the guy who was Commander NORAD chose me as the best chili cooker.
Well, one question, was beer allowed? That's the big one, yeah, because...
No, we didn't have any beer because this was on the side of a military headquarters.
Oh, okay.
That sort of thing there. But nonetheless, I mean, iced tea was and things like that. It was very nice.
A little something to put out the fire. Yeah.
And it was extremely nice meeting General Arnold and people like that and lots of other. I mean, there were more stars in that room than there are in the galaxy, but nonetheless, it made me feel good that he liked my chili. And so, but your chili just sounds like it's something that you ought to. Tell you the truth.
I do this maybe once a year, honest to God, maybe twice.
I think you may have missed your calling as a secondary profession, and that is to set this stuff up so you can market it commercially. I mean, good Lord, it sounds like, well.
Oh, I absolutely, because it's sort of a graduated process. I mean, there's a lot of different steps, but it all does, you know, it's do this, 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 and this, and then blend that and that. And when you've got that fresh chili sauce made from those rehydrated New Mexico chilies and a handful of japonicas and a little of this and a little of that, you know, because chili peppers have different flavors.
Well, you know, also, this sounds very cathartic as far as you are concerned. I think this is very cathartic for you.
Oh, I get a great deal of fun out of it. It's
sort of relaxation.
Absolutely.
A way to, you know, expiate a number of bad things that you've been harboring all week about some of the stories that you read and see and things of that nature.
You have to clean it out, Jim. You absolutely have to. And when the show's over, I'll go outside. I've got one of those little, you know, fold-up chairs. And I'll unfold it and sit next to the smoker. And every now and then I'll open the door and throw in a hunk of hickory. And just keep the smoke and the heat nice and level, pouring over those hunks of meat. And probably open up an ice-cold fermented beverage. And relax.
Well, you know, that's what I mean by withdrawing into your chamber nautilus. That's exactly what you have to do sometimes. I mean, we are confronted by times in which the minds of men are totally confounded to do anything about a lot of the problems. So it's the next best thing. We have to retreat into our own circle and do what makes us feel good as long as we can and enjoy it and realize that you're producing something that is going to make a lot of other people happy and it will give you a great sense of satisfaction. You know that you've done that. That's great. I think it's, like I say, it's cathartic and it's healthy. Because so much of this other stuff that you see on television or I see on the internet or this, that, and the other, it has but one effect, and that is a deleterious one, at least upon this speaker. It really does.
Well, it takes a toll on me, too. But by the same token, Jim, I don't think I could do, you know, just the... I couldn't do that kind of stuff that you and I don't get anything out of on the TV or commercial broadcasting either. So, you know, to inject a little bit of fun and around with this kind of thing once in a while is, I think, healthy. You know, there's other things we do. There's all kinds of things that we do to keep the horror at bay.
Listen, let me ask you something. When you first opened your program, you were playing some type of excerpt. Was that a church service? Or?
Oh, no, Jim. That was the Happy Goodman family.
Well, who were they?
Oh, my God. They were the Beatles of Southern Gospel Pentecostal music for 30 years, maybe more.
I've never heard these people.
Oh, you must. Well, do yourself a favor later in the evening when you are properly prepared, mind you.
No, I don't want to. I don't need
Happy
to.
Happy Goodman family on you. No, you gotta see the matron just to see the hair done up to Jesus.
No, I don't need that. As I've told you before, is this the type of background that you're constantly referring to that's made you a recovering Southern Baptist?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I spent, what was it, 2-3 years, as a little bitty baby disc jockey, spinning this stuff.
Oh, well, I don't think I could quite do that. I mean, I've done pleasant things myself, and I guess by comparison, some of the things I've done have been much more unpleasant than that, but nonetheless, I wouldn't want to do that. You know,
I can only imagine what the Happy Goodman family at 125 decibels piped into a Guantanamo detainee's cell sounds like. You know, thank heaven they didn't find him.
No, going back to the religious thing, I would prefer stained glass windows. And I would prefer Poiret's Requiem or other things. And I would prefer, I'll tell you, and I'll get off here in just a second. When I was a boy, my parents wanted to get rid of me because I was kind of fractious. So from the ages of 10 to 16, they saw to it that I was removed for 10 weeks every summer at a camp or camps in North Carolina. But one of the camps that I was sent to was called Camp Ridgecrest, and that's by the Southern Baptist Association. But Ridgecrest was an interfaith camp. wasn't Baptist. It was interfaith. And I remember on Sunday mornings, our church services were conducted on a lake. And, of course, they had the chaplain who stood on the end of the pier and delivered his message. And I guess what I'm trying to say is that my entry into the world of religion was a little softer than your own. And I'm so sorry that yours was made so.
Well, I mean, I was happy with it until the lights went on, Jim. Let's be honest. I mean, I was washed in the blood and all of that good stuff, and quite certain that I wasn't going to hell, and everybody else was. And you know, if they'd only just do what I've been told to do in church, everything would be all right. But yeah, then I got a little bit of education, and because I'd always enjoyed studying the Bible, I continued to study it when I got into a higher education situation. And if you study the Bible with anybody who's even remotely honest about it, you find out about how it came to be.
Well, you're right there. For example, the seven deadly sins that some churches talk about, I believe the Roman Catholic Church, those sins weren't even mentioned in the Bible. They were put together by some 5th century pope or something.
Well, sure, and something as innocuous within the Christmas story, for instance. You know, it goes without fail that the Christ child was visited by the shepherds and the three wise men. Right?
And I have no problem with that.
Well, but there's only one problem. Go through the scriptures. Find anywhere that it says that there were three wise men.
Well, there were Caspar, Melchior, and Balthazar.
And it ain't in there.
Okay, well.
I know, I went through the same thing. No, the only reason we assume that there were three wise men is because they brought gold, frankincense, and myrrh.
And don't forget, I went in the sampler.
Well, you know what? Mary kept the Jordan almonds and cherished them in her heart. You're exactly right.
I got into trouble back when I was in high school because, I was asked to read the Christmas story, and instead of saying frankincense and myrrh, instead of saying myrrh, I said I'm a Whitman sampler. And boy, did I get in trouble for that.
Oh, I got in, and see, eventually I got into all kinds of trouble because I started asking questions.
Well, I was just being naughty, anyway.
Right, but I wanted to know how come everybody was so certain that Judas went to hell.
Well, I mean, I've always just asked a question. Somebody had to do it. I don't know. We're getting too far afield here.
Yeah,
but nonetheless.
I far prefer chili.
I prefer chili, too, actually. But and so how long is this process going to take you?
It started this morning, and it will continue until Saturday morning.
Well, I can imagine your neighbors, their olfactory senses are absolutely...
Oh, when I fire up the smoker, it perfumes this whole plateau area.
Did they come over and look, or did they come over and wonder what you're doing? Or did they come over and think that?
Well, no. Frankly, some of them are meth heads, and they just don't have much of an appetite, Jim.
Like an arcane shaving ritual, or what? I mean, you know, I would love to live next door to you and smell all these wonderful concoctions put together. It'd be quite an olfactory delight for me.
I tell you, the funnest part for me is when I get the tongs out and get those poblano peppers out in the open flame. And just sit there and hold them over the open flame until the skin on them begins to blacken and bubble and stuff. And once they're all good and black, you shove them in a brown paper bag for about a half an hour or so. And then when you take them out and put them under the cold running water, the skin just comes right off of them, and you've got this beautiful pepper pulp. And that's how you go forward with the green chili sauce.
Good Lord, man. I'll tell you, before I had chili of yours, I had to genuflect. That's all there is to it. Let me let you go. I've just been running my mouth, and I'm going to get a big scotch and water.
I tell you what, you give me about two more hours, and I'll follow that up with an ice cold malted beverage.
Sounds good. My cat's to tell you, all of you hello, and Rupert said that he's still laughing at me for having, well.
Well, I hope you had the common decency to order him a different colored collar.
I did. His new collar is scarlet red. I figured, well, why not scarf it red in honor of the sin that you committed against me and the angst that you caused me in having to deal with all these crazy people saying, now, which type of brass thing do you want to have, and what do you want to put on it, and what type of...
Do you want the titanium engraving? Right, yeah.
Yeah, I said, well, what about radioactive cobalt? Do you have any U-238 I can put on so we can see him in the dark? Let me shut my mouth. Give Juanita my best, and also tell Kate I said thank you for her kind remarks the other night.
Actually, I think you just did, Jim. You have a wonderful weekend, you and Rupert and the Shady Lady, too.
Yeah, you take care, and God bless.
All right, and bye now.
Bye-bye.
And that is Jim, and onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Speak of the devil.
Oh, there you are. Did Jim conjure you?
Oh, goodness. Well, I don't have very good news. I got really, really out of it last night.
What happened?
Barack Obama. Have you heard about it? The interview he did with New York Times?
Oh, you mean New York, the magazine?
Or whatever it was.
Yeah, not only did I hear about it, I read it.
You did?
Yep.
Well, I haven't read it, but I heard, I was watching, what's his name? This film before Rachel Maddow, Keith Olbermann. And there was another guy on there with him, and they were saying, why? Why did he do that? They could see him doing something like that after the election, but before? And Sam Cedar was on there, and he said, I just don't get it. And I told you when I heard him saying that all those things about us liberals, and then when that... was like sucker punch, but this was like this sad, sad, dreary feeling came over me. And I heard it probably about 11:30, and I thought, well, I don't know, I don't have anybody to call. I just had to work it out, but it really bothered me. And I thought, well, I guess. Now this is what I took away from it. What I heard him say,
sure,
was that. He said it might be better for the Republicans. He might be able to work with them better because they'd be, the public be expecting things of them. And I thought, Lord have mercy. You know, I think maybe if it does happen, maybe you deserve to be impeached because they'll definitely start that, among other things. And the way I feel let down is from not doing anything about the past administration, you know, like you said, look to the future. No, if somebody gets murdered, you don't look to the future. You try to get them, bring them to trial. And this is worse than murder. This is murder plus the things that they've done. And then now this stuff you're talking about, this torture. People, they're not trying to do anything right. They're just a bunch of sadists. They're fixed galore out of that. Now, this is my opinion, and Bob, I tell you, I have so many conspiracy theories of my own that I can think of. Now, did I take away the right, what he said? You read the article?
Yes.
Yeah. And I don't know, just overwhelm me, because I'm like, now like you, you know, you want to see something in your lifetime, but people like me, I do too. But I hear, well, this is going to take place in this year, and I'm, gosh, am I still going to be around? And why about now? Why don't we have the good stuff now? I don't see.
Not all of it, but see, Juanita, I think you'll agree with me when I say, because, you know, I'm not a guy who goes in for miracles. I don't expect miracles. I don't expect the impossible.
I expect to be supported.
Yes.
And expected what he has said he would do. And I'm not blaming him. I'm blaming all the dadgum Democrats, most of them, 90% of them probably. That if they lose, that is, they themselves deserve to, the way they've acted. Kowtowing and bowing down and scraping, oh, beloved Republicans, you know. I just, Bob, I'll tell you, we want people like, you know, we want people like Adam Grayson. Thank God for somebody like him.
Yeah.
Or,
you know, yeah, I mean, there's a little handful. There's Alan Grayson. There's Bernie Sanders. There's Dennis Kucinich.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And Bob, I just tell you, I don't know. I don't really know how to pray about it. I pray that I said, oh, you know, please let us have at least two more years of trying something good, a little bit of good, but I just don't know. And the thing is that the money that has come, like you said about the money has come to the different states, I don't know what's been done. I mean, we've got a Republican-controlled Congress we've had down here for years, Senate and Representative. And I don't know what what they've done with all that money that came down here. I do know out where I live, they built a park out close to where there's a bunch of water moccasins and stuff. They got it's a good looking park. And there's people out here needs help. But no, they use their money. Oh, and actually they've built two parks out here in this little community. That we're actually a suburb. And, but I'm just so disappointed, and I don't understand him. I think, is he so naive? I mean, where's he been? It's like naive or something, some kind of wrong way of thinking. You know, he doesn't understand why the young people don't want to get out and vote, and they're trying. I don't know, Bob.
I know what you're talking about. You didn't. But I think this is the part that maybe got under your skin, and it is. It's toward the end of this article. It's at New York Times, nytimes.com. It's in the New York Magazine. The title of the piece is "Education of a President." And online, it's an 8-page piece. It's a long read, but it's worth it. Sandra sent me the link to this earlier today, and just reading her words on the electronic page as she sent it to me, I feared that Sandra's head was going to explode.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this thing will do it to you. And this paragraph in particular. I mean, I read it, and I come nigh to running naked in the yard.
Yeah.
Just a grabbing at my hair and howling at like Nebuchadnezzar, gone nuts in the desert. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Obama expressed optimism to me. You've read it, haven't you?
I haven't read it.
I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah. Obama expressed optimism to me that he could make common cause with Republicans after the midterm elections.
Yeah.
Quote, "It may be that regardless of what happens after this election, they feel more responsible."
Oh, sure.
"Either because they didn't do as well as they anticipated, and so the strategy of just saying no to everything and sitting on the sidelines and throwing bombs didn't work for them, or they did reasonably well, in which case the American people are going to be looking to them to offer serious proposals and work with me in a serious way."
Mm.
And Juanita, I'm not going to holler nor scream nor cuss nor nothing else. But I swear to Pete, I did. When I read this, I thought I was gonna just fly into a million pieces.
It was a wave of sadness. A wave of sadness just spread into my chest area and into my body. You know, it wasn't like the other. You know, the other was hurting, but this was like, what is this man thinking?
It's
have I given him something? Or is this the way he always was, or what?
That's the thing. More than anything, it's disappointing because it tells you that after 2 years,
mm-hmm.
after 2 years, and the year before that, and the year before that, because, you know, the Republicans are the ones who turned the presidential campaign into a 2-year affair.
Yeah.
The Republicans and the for-profit media have driven everything about this presidency, and the Republicans have not offered him anything to make him think that they will do that. He's okay. I'm going to kind of wander out in the yard for a minute here, but. I know this kind of stuff because my beloved wife, back before we were married, her job was dealing with addicts.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and drunks and things like that.
Yeah.
And she used to tell me about this thing called magical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually a term. When you are in the depths of addiction, and your world is going absolutely to pieces all around you, there is a phenomenon in which the addict, rather than deal with the problem that the addict has, and this can be extended into domestic abuse as well,
mm-hmm.
rather than deal with the problem that they have, they will engage in what's called magical thinking. And that is, it's a mindset where, despite every piece, every shred of rational evidence available to them, they still think, well, you know, something monumental will happen and it'll all get better and I won't have to get well. I won't have to get off the sauce. I won't have to quit whatever substance it is.
Uh-huh.
I won't have to leave the abusing spouse. Somehow it's just going to magically be better.
Yeah.
And that magical thinking phase is a real light. It's just a big blinking light for somebody who deals with addiction and abuse and things like that, because it tells you exactly where the person's mind is who's engaging in it.
Yeah.
Because there's only one way and what we've got here in this paragraph is Barack Obama engaging in magical thinking. Because again, there's
table gazing last night.
Well, but I think I'm closer to the point.
I think you are too. I haven't heard about the magical thinking.
This is magical thinking because he has no evidence. He has no public pronouncements from the Republican Party.
No.
You know, in fact, he's got contrary pronouncements. They have said that it is going to be one hearing after another,
right,
that subpoenas
right.
are going to fly out of the House of Representatives and the Senate as if they were upon golden wings.
Yeah, he's going to be under constant. I mean, that would be just one thing, the impeachment.
And see, the thing is, Barack Obama, I don't think, understands.
Obviously not.
I don't know. I'm going to go a little further. I don't, and I, you know, I've been saying this about Republicans for so long, Juanita, that after a while you just feel like a madman wandering in the wilderness. But he doesn't understand that the Republicans operate on a bully theory. The Republicans are bullies.
Yeah.
And bullies do not engage in rational thought. Bullies come up and threaten to knock you, to beat you to death, and take your lunch money from you.
Yeah. That's right.
And the only way you can ever deal with a bully is by getting up in their face, bloody in their nose, and tell, don't run off, I want to kick you some more.
Right, right, right.
And he has never, as God is my witness, he has never in 2 years done that, not once.
You think sometimes he's on the verge of something like that, and then he backs off and... You know, you think sometimes that, you know, some of the things like the medical care and all, you think that he's going to, oh, I'm going to demand this and that and the other, and then all of a sudden it's like you've gone downhill. I tell you, I feel it's like, okay, now, you've been through and I've been through 8 years of the Bushes.
Mm-hmm.
But I went through an extra 2 years of the Bushes because we had Jeb down here 2 years before his
sure.
the RO.
And I mean, there's another passage in this article where they talk, Juanita, about they're pretty sure the Republican nominee will be Mitt Romney.
Well, now I've heard Huckabee today.
Well, but there's mention that he might run against, you know, that the Republican primary the Republican primary season might be dominated in a contest between Romney and Huckabee. And you know what? Maybe they're just millions of light years smarter than me. But honest to Pete. Now, Juanita, you and I probably have a better functional understanding of fundamentalism between the two of us than any other two people in the liberal world. Okay? I mean, I'll say that. I'm not bragging. It's just, you know, it's kind of like, you know, people who have been in a concentration camp know more about being in a concentration camp than people who haven't.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, do you honestly think, knowing that the Republican Party has been dragged to the far right by its fundamentalist fringe, and that fringe comprises of about 30% of the American population and probably 60% of the specific Republican population, do you think for an instant that those fundamentalists are going to sit still for a Mormon for their party's nominee?
No.
They'll stay home.
But you know what? Whoever it is, if it's not Jeb, if they take Jeb on as vice president,
well, see, Juanita, I saw,
watch their back.
I forget where I was reading the other day, but I saw somebody remarking disparagingly about a prediction that Chris Matthews, and God, I hate to be on the same page with him, but I am in this instance. Some liberal website somewhere just had a high old time laughing, ha ha ha, at Chris Matthews. He sure is a dummy. Because he had said that Jeb Bush will run in 2012.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Now, that's one instance where I will say that Chris Matthews is not a dummy.
Yeah. Well, right now he's in his more reasonable phase, but you know how he goes in and out.
But I mean, really, would you, come on, you sent me the story. I think, you know. Jeb threatened to sue a woman for using an exclamation mark.
I mentioned that story. Yeah.
Now, why would he need to hang on to Jeb exclamation mark if he wasn't thinking about using that logo somewhere down the road? Hello? I mean, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh, I have no doubt that they're gonna work him in some way, somehow. I just wish it would backfire, but
you know what? It doesn't have to backfire as long as we got the magical thinking going on in the Oval Office.
I know. And you know, he had every opportunity. He's brilliant. People love him overseas. We loved him. He went in by landslide, and he's wanting to please the daggum Republicans. Please, I don't know, and they hate him.
Yeah, see,
they just hate him.
I don't know if Barack Obama has the ability to comprehend how much he's hated.
I don't think he must not.
I mean, I don't think he understands that the teabaggers and Glenn Beck and all that crowd, that they're not speaking in symbolically. This is not metaphorical for them.
No.
That is their house, and they aim to run him out of it.
Right.
I tweeted it a few days back, and I wanted to devote some time to it, and I'm going to keep it in the stack even for next week. But consider it homework reading. Everybody needs to go over to open.salon.com. In fact, the best way to do it is just to go to the Google and put Kika's blog. It's KEKA's blog. Kika's blog. And the name of the piece is White Men with Guns.
Oh, please.
And read it. The author is a woman named Kika. She's an African-American. She's written for the Chicago Sun-Times and the Arizona Daily Star. She has real-life experience behind her. And she tells a story and lays out white hatred in this country, complete with the graphics of the people doing the hating. And if you are not just shivering by the time you're done reading it, well, I guess you're a little bit, you're a
will
little
you
bit.
Send me that in an email.
I certainly will. I certainly will.
My pens don't work half the time. But, well, I know a little bit about it, but it really is a tragedy. It really is a tragedy. And I know it's worse for you, Bob, because you've got young children and you've got grandchildren. And, you know, I've always wanted grandchildren, but sometimes I think maybe it's best I don't. You know, that's the way I've come to look at it. Because this world is such a horrible place.
See, I've been posting on websites, and I'm trying to get some traction for it, and I'm not having a lot of luck, and I'm apparently the only liberal who's talking about this way. But you know what? I really am. I am really, really, really disturbed about this Joe Manchin rifle ad that I've been talking about all week.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing has smacks of assassination in it. Let's face it, if Joe Manchin did that ad, and it wasn't a political ad, if Joe Manchin was just some guy who put that up on YouTube, he'd have the Secret Service on his door.
Well, how many times do you hear, like, teabaggers and all those say, we ought to kill all the liberals? Kill them all. I've heard him say that a number of times.
It wasn't three nights ago that life support system for a haircut, Sean Hannity, said life will be good when we get rid of the liberals.
Yeah. And if that is not a threat, I don't know what is. And I'm going to say something before I forget about it. You know the man that Cheney shot? Have you seen him on TV?
Yeah, he said it 5 years now, and he still hasn't gotten an apology.
Well, the thing is, you know, it was a lot worse than it was told. He said that he actually passed out, and he said that, you know, he had a collapsed lung, and it came close to beads or whatever?
The shot.
Yeah, and it went close to close to his aorta, and he's still got a lot of those things in his body. He's got one in his larynx, because it went from his face.
He shot him in the face.
But you know what, Bob? I'm going to give a conspiracy theory. You think I'm going to get in trouble if I say this?
I don't reckon you would.
Or can you read my mind?
No, I think you can say it.
How many others did it? They're buried out there.
I know.
This guy said that they weren't friends. He said he met him maybe three times. Now, this is lately, you know.
Third time's the charm.
But how many other things, you know?
Yeah.
You seen some of those movies where they let a man loose and
sure, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Like these animals, you know, these which they do, or we know they do that. Why don't they do the other? And you know that he would love to do that, Mr. Evil.
No doubt about it. Hey Juanita, I got to run along. We've got all the lines lighted up, but you have a wonderful weekend now. All right.
You too, and I'm feeling better, but I'm telling you, we still have to watch out.
Hey, did you see Joy and Whoopi stomp off the stage today?
Yes, I did see that, and Barbara didn't like it a bit. They finally came back.
Yeah, Barbara didn't like that they walked off.
No, but she got him told too. And they did come back. They said that he apologized. But I think that was not really the reason they came back. They didn't want to mess with their jobs, you know.
Well, there was a paycheck involved, exactly.
Juanita,
you have a wonderful weekend, dear.
You too.
Bye now.
Night-night.
And we roll merrily along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, good evening, Bob. What's going on?
Well, hey, Reverbo, what's happening?
Well, I think I might be able to dovetail with your with the topic you started with tonight, because I wanted to start by talking about a good friend of the program, Mr. Palladino from New York.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. A Palladino of the... Yes.
Yeah, indeed. And he was, first of all, and this goes out to, with a reference and a notice to Sandra, he's not a good-looking man. He looks, as a matter of fact, exactly like what he is, a jerk.
Yeah, a pig, if you didn't feel bad about insulting pigs.
Exactly. But, I mean, he's just, they all look like what they are. It seems to me it's odd how that works. But he was worried during his diatribe against homosexuals that he might be taken out. Remember this? He might be taken out of contest or misquoted or anything, and he didn't want to, you know, make sure that that wasn't going to happen. I was thinking to myself, boy, you don't have anything to worry about, Jack. You've been really clear. You know, we've got tons of great quotes here, right? You know, we don't need to paraphrase you at all. I mean, and then I was, you know, earlier tonight you're talking about, I mean, what is it makes it a lot easier to molest people and torture people and, well, essentially kill people, brutalize people if you dehumanize them. And I'm just thinking to myself, how much longer are they going to go play this card? I mean, why does it, I just keep, you know, how much longer are they going to do this? Why does this still work so well to get votes, to just denigrate people? I mean, somehow or other, I'm supposed to believe that the great crash of 2008 was the fault of a couple of homosexuals. I can't do it.
Well, they do cause volcanoes and earthquakes.
Yeah, true, but I didn't know they had such an effect on my 401k. But it's just so horrible, and think about how reckless it is with all these, how tough it is to be, through no fault of your own, through just the accident, once again, of really of birth, to just decide that you're the kind of breed of human being that...
Ooh, that still gives me shivers.
Well, what kind of talk is that? And why is it coming out of the mouth of somebody that wants to be the governor of New York? That's what I want to know. And why is it still working?
Well, I guess we have to wait till November 2nd to see if it works.
Now, look at that guy in Colorado who little comment about how the woman who decided to, she really was raped, and she really did say no, and his comment was...
Sounds to me like you invited him back to your place for sex.
Yeah, you know, it was she's suffering from buyer's remorse.
That was the line.
That was the line. Well, I don't know, 2010, that line still works? Well, it still works on idiots.
Well, he had one foot on the floor. You know, it's the pool room. It's the pool room law. You know, it's not rape if you got one foot on the floor. It's just like shooting pool. You gotta have one foot on the floor.
Okay.
No.
Operate for me, will you?
No. It's sick. It's sick. I mean, you know, if you've ever shot pool in a bar or something, there's just an informal rule. You know, you can't just belly flop up onto the table and get it. And you gotta have one foot on the floor.
No, I know. I just wanted to get you to elaborate that.
No, but I'm ashamed of myself, but no, it's that kind of thinking, and yeah, it gets votes.
Why?
Because there's that much hate left in this country today, Reverbo. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, you know, you mentioned the Colorado rape case, you know, that's a repig licking, okay? I mean, that really is, that's a repig licking. We expect them to be that way. We're kind of sickened and disturbed that it can still get anybody to vote in this country, but it is what they do.
You would think immediately that not a single woman, well, not a single woman who would call herself, belongs to a political party, any of them other than Republicans, not a single one would vote for that pig. I mean, immediately, that's just, normally you could just check that off your list. No votes for you for women.
You know, the problems we face in this country, Reverbo, are complex.
They seem to be.
And it's one of those things where you try to solve one and you find out that you've exacerbated another. I mean, I see it every day just running around the blogs and reading comments because, you know, I'm sort of a glutton for punishment that way. I read the comments. And you can watch the stupid in all its full glory. So the other, you know, the other side is much better at messaging than we are. And rather than working on this nuanced stuff, the other side says, yep, we got a lot of complicated problems in this country. And you know what? We wouldn't have half of it if we could just pray in the schools, if they wouldn't know abortion, and if them queers and the Mexicans and the brown people would just learn to stay in their damn place.
Or go kill themselves, which is what some of the ones who are getting mercilessly bullied.
Well, right, and that's where I was going with you for a minute. We expect Republicans to do this kind of crap. But I have, I've got audio here. And it's like that article that Juanita was talking about. It's depressing. You know, Kate wrote a couple of minutes ago and she says, you know, why are people acting like they're surprised? The citizens are the ones who are engaged in the magical thinking. Barack Obama's a Chicago politician and a preacher in an empty suit. Why is everyone so surprised and disappointed, she asks. With the Chamber of Commerce and their foreign money buying all the elections, what's the use in giving any of this any energy? All the God folks have it in the bag. It's so black and white, Kate says. And I understand that. But again, that's a case of those people behaving the way we expect those people to behave. On the other hand, however, Reverbo, when the closest thing that Barack Obama has to an advisor on LGBT issues, I don't know if you're familiar with this story or not, but when she gives a speech, let me see if I've got this audio cued.
LGBT?
I've got lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered. His advisor is Valerie Jarrett. Okay? And she gave an interview to the Washington Post about gay teen suicides. Okay? Now, I'm going to roll this audio, and we're just going to listen to it for a minute, okay?
Yeah.
Or maybe I won't. Thought I had it queued up. Dad burn it. Well, here it goes. Well, sometimes things don't cooperate the way you want them to. Okay, so I'll just read it instead. So Valerie Jarrett gives an interview to the Washington Post. It's video, it's audio. And in describing the horrific story of a suicide by a gay teenager named Justin Arberg, she was trying to be sympathetic. But she described Justin Arberg. She said, you know, he had good parents and they were loving to him and they were accepting of him. They were accepting of his lifestyle choice. And those two words.
Of his choice.
His lifestyle choice. This is a 15-year-old child, Reverbo. He'd made a lifestyle choice.
Just like that one I made when I was 15.
Yeah, the one. You mean the one where you were going to be heterosexual?
I remember where I was. I think I was having a milkshake at a drugstore that day when the question just popped up in my mind. I chose girls. I guess I could have gone either way. Huh?
Yeah, just, you know, if you'd gotten strawberry that day instead of chocolate.
There you go. Whatever that.
You'd be dating guys. It was a lifestyle choice.
And we're still playing that card.
And again, but again, what's important there, Reverbo, is choice and lifestyle choice, those are the code words that have been toxically injected into the culture by the right wing. They talk about, you know, the reason that we can't have special legal protections to keep transgendered people from having their guts stomped out for being transgendered, or gay people for being gay. The reason we can't have those laws is because the right wing comes along and says, well, my Bible tells me I have to hate their damn guts. And after all, they's the ones that chose to be queer.
It's clear to me, yeah. As if your holy book has anything to do with it either.
Right, and you know, and lo and behold, there's Valerie Jarrett parroting the right wing's lines. Now, is there a connection between, say, parroting the right wing's lines about human sexuality and the need for teenagers not to hang themselves? Is there a connection, even a sort of psychic or the existential or absurdist, surreal, what have you, Reverbo? Is there a connection between what happens when the White House, supposedly Democratic, uses the right-wing's language, and when the White House engages in this thinking where they decide that everything's going to be just fine after the election, no matter what happens?
I don't even know how to process any of that.
Well, I mean, I see it as a sort of cerebral failure, that there is a connection, that there's a way down on the ground level connection that says that the Obama administration, that the White House, institutionally, don't get it. I think I've got that audio now. Let's have a quick listen.
Yeah.
Well, I think what we've seen over the last few months are some very tragic deaths of young people, our children, and avoidable deaths. They were driven to commit suicide because they were being harassed and in school, and driven to do something that no child should ever be driven to do. And in many cases, the parents are doing a good job. Their families are supportive. Before I spoke at the HRC dinner, I met backstage with Tammy Auberg, her son Andrew. These are good people. They were aware that their son was gay. They embraced him. They loved him. They supported his lifestyle choice. But yet when he left the home and he went to school, he was tortured by his...
You see?
Yeah. I mean, this is a Twilight Zone episode. I mean, I thought there was this dichotomy between these two camps. And I don't see where... At that point, it just evaporates.
Well, the funny thing is, there's somebody within the Obama administration, and his name is Kevin Jennings, and he's over in the Department of Education, and he is in charge of trying to do something about this epidemic, this pandemic of bullying in the schools. And I got a sneaking suspicion that when he heard that lifestyle choice line, he just put it, because he's like me, he's a recovering Southern Baptist. And his daddy was a minister and stuff, and he just put his, you know, little head and little face palm action and just, oh.
Oh, God, yeah. Boy, is she the wrong person to be speaking about this. I mean, how does that just pop out of your mouth of a person who works for the progressive side?
I mean, I just by way of creating, you know, some sort of parallel space, if a child was 15 years old and going to a high school and being bullied because he had a withered arm, would there be somebody from the Obama administration out there talking about the lifestyle choice the child had made? You know, to appear in public with a withered arm?
I hope not.
I've got a story... David in Tennessee sent it along to me a few days back. It's a high school in Ohio, where there were four kid suicides inside of a year.
That is unbelievably disturbing.
And one of the girls was a beautiful young woman. She was, her parents were immigrants from Croatia. Her daddy talked about how she would always do anything she could to make him smile. And the story remarks upon the fact that there's a photograph of the young woman, sitting at the end of the living room. And he looks over there at the photograph with tears in his eyes and he says, "Now no more smiles." And her name was Slijana.
you know, one of them funny names, because here in America, we don't understand no funny names.
No, we don't.
And up there in Cleveland, where they lived, they tortured the child every day by calling her things like Slutty Jana and throwing food at her.
Yeah, well, kids will be kids, huh?
And she hanged herself.
Does the story say anywhere that she ever, like, asked anybody for help or ever...
Yes, they begged the school board, day in and day out.
Right.
Teachers, principals, superintendents, school board, what have you. Nothing.
Right. Well, you know, they can't... That one is just pathetic.
But, you know, I'd like to know from Valerie Jarrett over at the White House, I'd like to know, you know, if she feels sorry for her, too, you know, because of her lifestyle choice in being a Croatian immigrant.
Right, like you can, like, we can pick our parents. It's very easy.
Right, because, I mean, if Justin Arberg was a lifestyle choice, so, too, was Slajana. She chose to. She made a lifestyle choice to go to that public school when she didn't have a perfect command of the English language and spoke with an accent.
Right, and had a funny sounding name. It's all on her. Well, look, these people. It's the perfect storm, I guess. You've got a bunch of mouth breathers, a bunch of idiots, and all they get. We gave up the only way to do this. To accomplish this, of course, is to keep people from evolving. And the brilliant way to do that is to take over the mass media. We've had this conversation 10 trillion times, and it was sort of handy that the liberals just let the conservatives take over the mass media after Watergate.
Well, you know, why have a fuss?
Really? So for 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 24/7, as the young people say, they simply lie to us and keep us pretty stupid. And then these people, you know, some legitimately and some not, start getting worried about what's going on. And they're going, instead of, they don't have the capacity to look at the facts and critically, you know, work their way through it and come to some sort of evaluation or analysis of anything. All they do is yell, give us some scapegoats.
And you know what? The perfect example of that, I got another clip for us.
Okay.
You're a wonderful foil for running clips.
Good.
And this is the one that Jim and Juanita have both referred to.
Okay.
Our buddy Dennis in Kentucky sent this along. This is the big giant head, Bill O'Reilly, appearing today on The View.
Okay.
Melting down. You remember how we were talking just a few minutes ago about how the right wing just finds, you know, everything will be better if we just do something about them?
Sure.
This is that. Here we go.
Just explaining why his numbers are down. So the people see $1 trillion of their tax money and nothing to show for it yet. But they also see a widening gulf between the president and them personally. And that's what I write about in Pinheads and Patriots.
I know,
all right, let me give an example. The mosque down here on 9/11. That's inappropriate. It's sure. They have a right to do it and the Constitution, but it's inappropriate because a lot of the 9/11 families who I know say, look, we don't want that. That shouldn't be there.
But what about...
Reverbo, I got to interrupt for just a minute.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, there's a reference to the mosque on 9/11.
Yeah, I heard that.
This guy doesn't... His brain has been reduced to such a fetid soup that he doesn't even, the words, and that's the thing, if you're talking to right-wingers, the words don't even have to make any sense. That's why speaking in tongues works. I mean, it could be Jabberwocky. It was really going to slidey toge 9/11 mosque.
Sure.
But the other thing is a visual. And you know, you're an erudite man about town.
I would think so.
When you see a guy walking along with the tip of with the bottom tip of his necktie tucked into the top of his pants, what does that make you think?
That look, not every guy can pull that look on. That's what it makes me.
Well, Bill O'Reilly can't. Because he's sitting there next to Baba Wawa. And he's got his silver and purple rep tie tucked into the top of his pants. I'm sorry. I don't know why, but I notice these things. Maybe it's because I look so bad in a suit, too.
Well, I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that particular fashion statement in a long time.
Yeah, well, like you say, not just everybody can pull that off. Well, let's continue, shall we?
Yeah, by all means.
No. But there's the president. There's the president going, well, they're right to do it.
Yes.
And then the guy
this
says,
America.
And then the
this
hold
is America.
Hold it. Listen to me, because you'll learn. All right. Says to the press, yeah, they have a right to do it, and that's true.
Yeah.
And then the question is, but what about the wisdom of it, Mr. President? And he goes, I'm not going to comment. Whereupon everybody in the country goes, what?
Well, wait a minute. Let me ask you this.
That is the gulf
between them. Let me ask you this. So you're saying that Americans are not smart enough to recognize that while it is part of our Constitution to say freedom of religion and freedom to worship, and there were 70 families who are Muslim who also died in that building.
Yeah.
So you're saying that we that his saying that they have the right to do it and not saying any more than that is
really?
Why his approval rating
That's
is going down.
I'm showing that there is a gulf between Americans wanted to know what his opinion was on the issue and
Number
he wouldn't
five,
give it.
We're Americans.
That's
five.
One. That's
we
one
agree
thing.
With
and,
you know,
so you agree with it.
No,
most
we're Americans. I'm an American.
Let me break this to you. 70% of Americans don't want that mosque down there.
Exactly.
So don't give me the we
exactly.
Do.
I want to see that.
You want to bet on that? You want to bet? I'll show you that poll in a minute.
See? Muslims killed us on 9/11. And that is when, as our friend and hero Mr. Vonnegut would say, the excrement struck the circulating blades.
How can he even use the word wisdom ever, in a sense, coming out of his mouth? Wisdom.
Let me educate you.
Yeah.
You'll learn.
Laughs? Was he getting laughs or applause with that line? I couldn't tell.
No, that was the ooh. You know, that's when Fonzie says, "Sit on it and spin." Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh.
God, what a paradox. What an incredibly forgiving, not just a religion, but there's a whole system of behavior they have. Because it's impossible for them to practice what they preach. They get caught with their pants down all the time. Wisdom, what they hope and pray for every night is that they don't wise us up.
No, but the thing is, Reverbo, and this is one of those trust me, I'm a doctor moments.
Yeah.
And I've hounded on this a little bit. We react in shock when one of these religious freaks winds up being proven to be a sexual hypocrite, and we say, "See, that's how they are." The other side says, "It's okay if they do that. Jesus forgave them." And we do too. Now, on the other hand, if it's one of those godless secular liberals, well, we haven't been forgiven by Jesus, so therefore we are not entitled to their forgiveness. And they did. And see, this is the important part, Reverbo. They decide who Jesus has forgiven.
Well, they decide who God loves and who God does not love.
Bingo! Welcome to Calvinism 101.
That's where I was headed. And clearly, if you're successful and you're rich, God must love you. And if you're anything else, well, then I guess you deserve to be, you know, brutalized and
Yeah, you know what? Little Justin R. Berg was born gay because God was mad at him in the womb.
Well, because Eve sinned. We're all born in sin.
There you go.
This goes right to the heart of the whole how authority people with that who the authority figure.
Didn't Paul McCartney once have a really bad album called Back to the Egg? This is that. This is Back to the Egg.
Yeah. Well, this is the difference between morals and ethics. It's the difference between people who have any interest in thinking for themselves and who have no interest in it. So morality to these people is just following orders. That's all. And for the rest of us, you know, we like to do a little, evaluation before we draw any conclusions. But their conclusions are already drawn. All they have to do is come up with, fit some neatly and nicely tied, the inverted premises thing. They like the Iraq War was simply trying to find something to an already predetermined conclusion. They do this all the time. Of course homosexuals aren't loved by God. Mexicans for sure aren't. Progressives aren't.
Women aren't when they get uppity and start talking in church.
No, they hate women. Another thing, though, this is sort of attached to this, is why we don't need any scapegoats. I mean, you can just see what's going on. They made it quite clear. They're going to do everything they can to obstruct any progress. From the day Barack Obama took office, they held a news conference, or they probably did, and just said, well, what are y'all going to do? And Mitch McConnell said, we're just going to try to ruin it. We're going to start today. So I don't know why people need scapegoats when they're all just right there in front of us. Why we're blaming Obama because there isn't enough progress being made? This is just, don't talk to me about wisdom. I don't know. All I know is they got a lot of get out of jail free cards, these people. I can't believe how handy their whole.
Well, of course they do. They print them. They've got to die.
Damn. Unbelievable. But, I mean, it just reminds me so much of, throwing people scapegoats, eventually what's going to happen is, things are just going to get really, really out of control here.
Yeah, you're going to wind up with, I don't know. One of these days, some politician will make an ad where he's talking about the president, and he takes out a .30-06 and shoots it.
They're coming damn close to doing that as it is.
Oh, wait, that already happened.
What's that woman's name in Arizona? Her entire political ad was her blasting away with a... What the hell is her name? Some kind of automatic rifle.
Yeah.
But, folks, I don't know how to break this to you, but 4,000 years ago or 10,000 years ago... We had abortions, and we had poor people, we had homosexuals, we had the haves and the have-nots, we had kids who were, people who were wearing green socks on Blue Socks Day, and none of this ever goes away. And we still have it today, and we still have to deal with it. Unless, I guess, their concept now is, well, it's illegal to kill you. We can't shoot you and kill you, so we just hope you go kill yourself. So Mr. Palladino will get up there in front of everybody. No, actually, he was up in front of some Hasidic Jews, whatever sense that makes.
But only male ones.
Well, of course. Basically saying that the homosexuals are...
A deviance.
Well, they're a breed of human that is not, that is below, you know, it's one of the unter humans, as I'm sure the Nazis...
Untermenschen.
Yeah, they're, and so we shouldn't be encouraging our... children, we should be discouraging this at all costs there.
Can you imagine that in 2010 it's a good idea to go to a synagogue to talk about Untermenschen?
God, really? You know, Jesus, that just dawned on me. That is bizarre. But here he goes, and all he's, I mean, what he's saying is, yeah, the more of you, you know, if you, here's the cyanide pills, we'll just lay them out for everybody. You can just...
Well, you know, I mean, come on, Reverbo, it's your phrase, man. It's a cavalcade of what?
Let me think. A cavalcade of crankshafts. Is that what it was?
Open septuagenarian? Open Sid Caesar?
Cavalcade of candy. That's what it was.
Crazy.
I don't know, man. But, boy, is he an ugly son of a bitch, too. I hope Sondra's listening, because... But this is just flat scary.
Oh, God, that's where this program's gotten to. We're playing to Sandra now.
Look, man, but this is too... Wasn't there a moment, was there ever a moment where the conservatives didn't play this card? I mean, that Southern strategy, that was Kevin Phillips, and that was Turkey Dick. And I guess have they been playing this card ever since?
Never stopped working. Look, you thought that the birthers were fun? You know, where's the birth certificate? Well, there's a place called the Western Center for Journalism.
Okay.
Founded by Joseph Farah. Just look up Joseph Farah. This is the article about birtherism. They don't think that birtherism answers the necessary questions, Reverbo.
Oh.
This includes the determination of his actual identity, his being Obama's. This includes the determination of his actual identity, which requires genetic analysis. I started my investigation and analysis by deeming nearly every assertion as open to question, including the claimed identity of Mr. Obama's parents. A certificate that a child was born to Stanley Ann Dunham and Barack Hussein Obama in Honolulu on 4 August 1961 might be true. But assuming it's true, it does not necessarily follow that Mr. Obama is that child. Whether he is or not requires genetic analysis. You ready for the fun part?
I'm just speechless at this.
Barack Obama, according to these right wing freaks, Barack Obama's daddy is Malcolm X.
Holy shit!
Gotcha.
Think that could be true?
No.
I used to think that Ronald Reagan was a replicant. That he was somehow he had come to Earth from a faraway place and had assumed the shape, the organic shape of a human. Yeah. So
pod people.
I should call this guy up and we should get together on this. We should compare notes.
Lots of aliens out there.
How much LSD do you have to take to come up with this?
See, I have this theory, and it has to do with not taking enough LSD. There are some people for whom taking profound psychoactives actually makes them sane. And this Farah character is one of them. You know, I mean, I don't care, you know, the I don't care if we're using the liquid and doing a little tiny drop in the eyelid, you know, that's fine. Because it goes straight to the brain that way. Next thing you know, you're not talking about Malcolm X being Obama's father.
Well, that sounds like a damn lifestyle choice to me.
what I find even more fascinating with that article is the idea that any son of Malcolm X is doom for the Republic.
I think I'm going to get into this whole denigrating different breeds of humans thing. I think I'm down with that. I think I'm going to
This deserves some work. This deserves some real cavalcade of crazy scholarship, Reverbo.
Yeah, it could. Maybe the cavalcade of crazy could interview this person. No, I think I'm okay with this. If this is where it's going to go, the Bush family, for example, through no fault of their own. And you know how much I hate rich people who squander their wealth. It just drives
absolutely.
God, I can't stand it. But here's, this is the Bush family who just, you know, just by accident, pure accident of birth, was born with like silver, you know, silver spoons up their ass. And, you know, I could, if it turned out tomorrow that entire clan was destined to rot under a bridge I would pretty much, I think I'm okay. I would hope for freezing cold weather as soon as possible. I mean, if that's
I get it. I understand it. Kind of.
I have no trouble with it either.
Kind of runs against your basic kumbaya nature, but you know what? When you're driven to a place, you can't be faulted for taking the direction you took.
Well, I'm an equal opportunity sort of guy. I mean, I think that's what, you know, what's good for me is certainly good for them.
Of course, I also think that there's every chance in the world that, I mean, if we can make that argument about Barack Obama, God Almighty, you know, Barbara Bush, she's older than the Quaker Oats man. There's no way that's not some sort of spawn of Cthulhu.
Is that sort of like on Bonanza when we kind of realized that Paul, there was only like 2 or 3 years difference between Adam and Paul?
Yeah.
It's kind of like
that. I think that's why Adam had to leave.
That's creepy.
You know, he went and became a doctor.
Oh, he did. What was the name of that show?
Trapper John, M.D.
Pernell Roberts?
Yep.
Started that show?
Yeah. For some reason, Wayne Roberts couldn't get the role of Trapper John in Trapper John, M.D., and they got Parnell Roberts instead. Wayne Rogers.
They got Parnell Roberts instead. Hmm. I must not have seen any of that show. Well, I was too busy watching probably My Mother, the Car.
Quincy.
Or what was it? McLean Stevenson's horrible show.
Oh, Hello, Larry.
Hello, Larry. Yeah. Hold on a minute. There you go.
Okay, I knew there'd be one in there somewhere. Hey, Reverbo, I'm going to roll, brother.
All right, make it personal if that's at all possible.
I don't see how it could be any other way, brother.
So, all right, well, take it easy. We'll catch up with you next week then, I guess, huh?
All right, hopefully there'll be some photographs of the chili.
Oh, can't wait.
All right.
Later.
Later, bye. My two favorite soups in the world, chili and gumbo. Absolutely. You know, I got too many blinking lights to take a break. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. Brian from New Hampshire here. I'll try to make it quicker so other people can get in. While Juanita, God love her, I don't disagree the conscience of the Horn Radio audience, and I'm the most barely conscious caller, Brian from New Hampshire. But she was talking about the tragedy of it all, of the Obama administration, of Obama himself. I was just rereading The Birth of Tragedy by Friedrich Nietzsche, and this point here where I was at was where it distinctly describes the teabaggers, the tea partiers, the phony bastards there that have made a deal with the devil. And he says, this whole book is about the Dionysian and Apollonian conflict
in
ancient Greek tragedies, yeah.
And it's one of the things that I love so much about this program. Again, it's one of those moments where I say I dare and defy anybody else listening to any other program, with the possible exception of Malloy. With the exception of Malloy, this stuff does come up. But can you imagine tuning into Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity and somebody calling up and saying, Megadiddos from Busted Knuckle Rush, I was just sitting around reading my Nietzsche today. You know, it don't happen, Brian. It makes me so happy that it happens here. Thank you.
No, that's right. It does happen. But the whole Obama, you're talking about that interview, talk about a tragedy where he thinks he could still make a deal with these Republicans. He thinks he can work with them, and he sounds like a real shiftless salesman there, an untrustworthy salesman, a corporatist to his very core. That's what I told people throughout 2008, and they just blew me off, and they just say, well, he's our first black president, and I remember I was demonstrating in 1968, and I remember this and that, and I remember he's a community organizer, and he's really with the people, and he's really... Well, he's not been so much with the people as we need him to be, because these are dire economic times. I believe in some areas they surpassed the sufferings of the Great Depression in some areas of the country. There are these foreclosures, et cetera, that should be a moratorium. He should have done that a month ago. He should do that, and it shouldn't leave it up to Bank of America and those legalized thieves to do it. They don't even have an actual proper title history to these places where these innocent people are being thrown in the street. But I did. I was going on to the Organizing for America website before. That's before I saw this about the interview you're talking about with Juanita there. The economy and jobs, 4,051,000. That's a low conservative estimate. The numbers of American jobs created or saved by the Recovery Act, the stimulus package, did not, I believe, not one Republican voted for, and they all want to destroy whatever's left of it when they get in. If they seize power in January 2011 with their fascist media. And the small businesses, 6,732,000, who are the number of small businesses eligible for health care tax credits under the Affordable Care Act. And it goes on from there that the middle class, number of middle class families in the United States that received a tax cut through the Recovery Act, 111,399,000.
That's more than a third of the country, Brian.
That's right, that's right. A number of Americans with pre-existing conditions who can no longer be denied coverage by health insurance companies, that's by the Health Reform Act, 5,615,000. It goes on from there. Number of teachers' jobs in education, number of teachers' jobs saved because Democrats passed the deficit-neutral state aid bill, 161,000. Plus, I believe there's more teachers' jobs that were saved as part of the stimulus package, too, in the state and local governments all over this nation. And I can't believe the young people out there, there's so much I want to talk about, but I can't believe the young college students don't want to get out there and vote for Obama. He's doing so much to try to make college affordable for them, for God's sakes, against these same Bank of America, these private lenders. He's trying to move them out of the equation and give them where it's not for profiteering, but they go there where they don't have to pay back huge amounts of debt, and where they're forced into a corporate job, or if they finish law school by dint of valor, whatever you want to call it, they're not being forced into being a corporate lawyer for the rest of the thieves. Obama's fighting for that, yet I'm disappointed when I hear him say things like he thinks he can work with the Republicans. Maybe that's part of it. I'll try to think of it positively, that the gift of being a politician, that from the Chicago wards, it's not much different from the Boston wards or New York City wards, that Barack Obama has that gift. Maybe that's what it is. But I think he's gonna, if they go ahead with everything they want to do about just privatizing Social Security, allowing the thieves that have already stolen $4 trillion from the workers, American workers' annual surpluses, and the rest of the thievery there, and just the scapegoating of immigrants and the rest of it, if whatever bill they put on the table, he may say he wants to work with them, but he very politely and very, with those left-handed artistic people, they're very quickly will sign a veto 2,000 times if that's what it takes, and they can throw all the phony impeachment charges at him that they want. I believe it'll be the same. Maybe he's trying to be another Clintonian type of Democratic president, and that's not good. I don't think it's 1994 anymore.
Well, there's scary stuff that comes out of that, because if you recall, Brian, it was after the Republicans took control of the House and Senate that they essentially forced Clinton into the compromises that wound up being the welfare reform. And
right.
We don't talk about that nearly as often as we should, because that didn't work.
There's no longer any safety net for all the millions of unemployed left there by George W. Bush's 8 years of misrule and corporatist friendly royalist rule there, where the millions that he made a million government jobs, and yet he could still not, he didn't create one net. He had net job losses there at the end of his 8 years, George W. Bush. And Obama's already cut 350,000 of those government jobs there to try, because he's doing the Clintonian thing again. And that's what as much as they had on him on the that sick bastard there, that Ken Starr with the so-called moral majority types of these people here, where they let out the blatant pornography of him with Monica Lewinsky, and still Clinton, he would still, on some issues, he wouldn't bargain with them. He nearly killed Obama. Bin Laden, Osama bin Laden on August 6th, 1998, after the Rio major attack on, that was the Tanzanian and Kenyan embassies. They were
right.
American soil, 5,000 plus, mostly African, black Africans wounded, and at least 8 or 12 Americans were killed. 225 died along with the 5,000 wounded who are still not over what's happened to them. I'm sure they have the post-traumatic stress disorder like our, God love them, the people there at the World Trade Center. And yet the Republicans, he keeps saying, I'm in everything but an undeclared war with this bastard in Afghanistan. Please help me with this. They said, Monica, where's the blue stained dress? Where's the blue stained dress? They had some slogan that they kept chanting there. Like I said, repeat the lie there. They kept chanting it. It was over this stupid little, a politician who have, in all places, Washington, D.C., there's actually a politician who actually is an adulterer. I mean, get in line behind the tens of thousands of other men and women who preceded Bill Clinton as adulterers who held national office in Washington. That's ridiculous. You know, power is the absolute aphrodisiac for these people. But I think Barack Obama, he's sharper. He's not going to get Clintonized that way, of course. Of course not. They're not going to catch him that way. Republican closet cases themselves, like Mitch McConnell there with his beard there, his wife there, they're not going to catch him that way. But they are looking to get him, and these are even more fascistic than they were in 1994, if that's possible. And I think what Friedrich Nietzsche was describing, he took this excerpt from Faust. I was just on this when Juanita was talking about, she sounded really depressed like I am too about all of this. It is such a great tragedy. This president can be harder on these damn Republicans every single day, and the American people will really back him up on it. But he talks about Helen of Troy, and I believe this applies equally to Sarah Palin or to Marty Feldman's guy's lady there, Miss O'Donnell there in Delaware. But
the cod, yes.
He exclaims with Faust about this, that making a deal with the devil. Un solet ignit nischlicklingsle gewalt in Liban sein des einzigen Gestalt. And that's what it means. My German's horrible. And shall not I, by mightiest desire, in living shape, that soul fair form acquire. Faust, Sandwich's translation, and he's talking, how people can be so easily seduced into a massive war that was for this woman that was seized as Helen of Troy, who apparently by many ancient Greek poets and, the historians later, their accounts of this mythical or perhaps real woman, that she was not such a...
She wasn't the hottie that she was made out to be?
Yeah, she wasn't such a virtuous woman at all.
Okay, so maybe she was a hottie, just not virtuous.
Right.
But then again, that's another classic case of antiquity, cherche la femme, blame the woman.
No,
I get it. No, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And to describe Sarah Palin, there's a lot of rumors about her, too, and her personal background and the years up there in Alaska there and et cetera. But I think these Republicans, they've got me...
Some long nights in Alaska.
Yeah. They've got me into thinking, knowing that, this fits Brian as your my recent calls where I was Fred Adair, the great nephew of Red Adair, the firefighter, and when I was Dr. Remulak there, from the Benihana School of Surgery.
And I gotta tell you that Ferg's knee is feeling much better, Doc.
Well, that's why I know you're keeping me. I know this Highway State Patrol of West Virginia is there to keep me away from checking his humors there. I don't blame you there after that treatment there. But and I was Dr. Remulak. In other cases there, too, where I've tried to add comedy, they've turned me into... I know my Halloween costume has got to be the Mad Hatter. I got to be like, I'm not Johnny Depp. What do you want for free, horn listeners? I'm not Johnny Depp. I can't match that. But I just... I'm looking at the Disney costumes. I guess, what was it? They just came out with a movie by Tim Burton earlier this year.
Yep.
Of Alice in Wonderland. Yeah, that's supposed to be... That sounds like a great movie. But, And they're driving me into it. And the thing where I've already bought a crossbow, Bob, a pistol crossbow. I'm not going to buy a firearm because, I am a former Marine. I know how to use firearms, but I miss my Casper buddy so much I'd probably use it on myself before. But
let's don't do that. Yes.
No, let's not do that. I know, but these Tea Partiers make me think I want to, just for self-defense, I need to get...
No, you know what you need?
Yeah.
You need a Nerf gun. That's what you want, is a Nerf gun.
You're right.
With the little Nerf projectiles, because you do that in conjunction with the Mad Hatter costume, and I think your defense is a lead pipe cinch at that point.
Laughter is the best medicine, and here we go again. A lot of my friends, I remember back in film school there at Emerson College and Harvard Extension School there, they said I could play, that I could make my own movie where I could be Brian Martin, the son of, or the little brother of Steve Martin. I could be the New Hampshire jerk. I could be like that version of that, the Navin Johnson character. But here's they make me think of destructive things, Bob. That's what these Tea Partiers do, these phony. And they do to any of us. They force this fight or flight.
Right. It turns your mind into jello. It really does.
But I just need to hit him back with comedy. I think you're right. And then just move on. They deserve that.
A good laugh and a little bowl of chili, and we'll all be all right, Brian.
But the working class guy is still who I believe Obama is far more for than any Republican there. Like I say, they didn't vote. Not one of them voted for the veterans in December 2009 for the VA bill. But like Mr. Rivers here at this book, on this book, Cruel Shoes by Steve Martin. Then I'll fade out there. I promise, Bob. Demolition of the Cathedral at Chartres. And this was Mr. Rivers. Mr. Rivers was raised in the city of New York, had become involved in construction, and slowly advanced himself to the level of crane operator for a demolition company. The firm had grown enormously, and he was shipped off to France for a special job. He started work early on Friday, and due to a poorly drawn map of Paris, at 6:30 a.m. one morning in February, began the demolition of the Cathedral at Chartres. The first swing of the wrecking ball knifed an arc so deadly that it tore down nearly a third of a wall, and the glass shattered apart in tones, and it seemed to scream over the noise of the engine as the fuel was pumped into the long neck of the crane that threw the ball through the window of the cathedral at Chartres. The aftermath was complex and chaotic, and Mr. Rivers was allowed to go home finally to New York City. And he opened up books on the cathedral, the Chartres Cathedral, and read about it and thought to himself how lucky he was to have seen it before it was destroyed.
There you go.
I love that book.
I love that book. And that, I had forgotten about how lucky he was to have seen it before it was destroyed.
Next summer, I promise to keep people, they won't have to suffer through every week, but I'm going to read from Cows in Trouble next summer sometime. I think that's a nice summertime.
You know what that does? That sounds like summertime beach reading, Brian. You have a good evening, my friend.
You too.
All right, bye now.
Bye-bye.
He mentioned being the New Hampshire version of the jerk. Nah. Because I can't see Brian running down the road screaming, the new phone book's here. Hey, look, everybody, I'm somebody. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Listen, I knew that article would do you in. I mean, the level of...
Ruined me.
The level of navel-gazing is just, like, stunning, too. And I was sort of thinking, wait a minute, he's aligning himself with that Ryan. Do you know how horrific that Congressman Ryan is? I mean,
the one from Wisconsin? Oh, he's toxic.
Yeah. No, the fact that he,
Yeah, but again, this is the guy who's hailed by the Republican Party as the smart one.
Yes, I'm saying. And it's just sort of...
It's like looking at the Beatles and thinking Ringo was the smart one.
Well, no, but it's... I don't know what he's doing. He better hope that the Republicans run Palin and that... Who's that dude from New York?
Oh, Palladino.
Yeah, he's gonna lose because I'm not too sure.
What? But like I said with Juanita, Sandra, isn't it just a little bit, a few parsecs past Pluto to think that Mitt Romney will ever be the Republican nominee? I mean, please.
That's another one that I was really sort of, scratching my head about too. That comment and that one quote when he's talking about, after just not doing anything, they're going to want to work with me after the election. I'm thinking, where was he during the 90s, Bob? Do you know? Where was Obama?
University of Chicago.
I know, but you understand what I'm saying? It's like, how in the world is he coming up with that conclusion? I mean, didn't he see what happened to Clinton after...
Yeah, but that's because Clinton did it wrong.
Well, no, but... Oh, no. He needs to take a few pages. I mean, as much as I have issues with Clinton, he needs to take a few pages out from the Clinton.
No, but do you see what I'm saying? You know, it's just, it has nothing to do with the Republicans. It's because
ourselves. You know, we didn't play Kumbaya loud enough, or we played it in 4/4 and it should have been in waltz time. Navel gazing.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But the whole article is just—I mean, it was really, you know, the sort of, well, Ariana, I don't like my decoration. It's just like any opportunity. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that one just sort of took me by surprise.
I was just like, and the point of that, I mean, we understand that you want to keep, you know, spit on the professional left or the, whoever they are, but it's just kind of like, wow, we get it, you know? Uncle, okay, at this point.
I know. But, yeah, this biz, still there?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. This business where... he thinks it's going to get better for him and the Republicans. I mean, isn't that just really, if I let him hit me a little bit harder, he'll quit hitting me?
No, I just thought, I mean, because I actually read the whole, I know it was long, but I read the whole thing because I was kind of just mesmerized.
Oh, no, it was, I did too. It was like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You know, nobody admitted after the first 5 minutes, you got to keep turning pages.
How ridiculous. It just got worse and worse, and it culminated with that last page, which just blew me away. I'm like, oh, dear God, this fool really thinks that he's going to still be trying to work with the... I mean, it's bad for us that's the attitude, you know, because I'm...
You know, poor Bart Cop, I don't know if he's read this yet, but he's going to have an aneurysm.
Yeah, it's... you know, and of course, after I read that, I had the flash on Mike Malloy when he went off about how, I guess, some middle-of-the-road lefties are giving him a hard time, and it's just like, I can't, you know, I agree. I'm like, well, don't attack us in any form, as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, I know I'm going to vote for the guy in 2012. I know I'm going to. I already know. I'm not going to sit it out. My father would and my mother would both rise up from their graves and haunt me if I sat out an election. So I know who I'm going to vote for president in 2012. Because what? Let's see. Mitt Romney? Oh, Mitt's going to be a better choice than Barack Obama? No.
Well, no.
Huckabee? Palin? My personal choice? Jebby?
Well, no, but that's funny about Chris Matthews, though. I'm like... You know, we're all over that resurgence of the Bushies and Chris Matthews. You know what I'm saying? I just thought, wow, okay. You know, just keep a record of how that's popping up in the media, you know?
Oh, it is. But see, the thing is, we understand Bushies for what they are. They are, you know, they never go away. They're like crabgrass. They're like kudzu. You can't. It's multiflora roses in the hills here. You can't get rid of them. And so you know it's not crazy talk to suggest because again you know like I said Juanita sent me that article about Jeb threatening to sue Deb Gianulis for using DEB exclamation point as her logo. Well, why the hell do you need a logo if you're not planning to run for something? Is he going to open up an ice cream stand called Jeb exclamation point?
All right. No.
You only protect that trademark, by God, if you've got designs on using it.
No, it's true. And it's just sort of, I just think, you know, we really should keep, you know, abreast of that situation. I don't think it's far-fetched at all, especially at the rate Obama's going with his obsession with the sort of weird-ass bipartisanship. I mean, there's already a 40-60 Republican majority, so I can't wait to see how they handle shit when they get, you know, a little bit more.
Well, you know, I've been taking a little hell for my stance on voting for Jesse Johnson. And people say, well, but, you know, but we'll lose the majority in the Senate. And, you know, I can't help looking at it and go, whatever made you think you had one?
Well, yeah, no, see, that's what I mean. The 40-60 majority, that's exactly what I mean. The Republicans hold right now, because so what? You vote for the other guy. You have your own reasons for voting for the other guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like your life and your kid's life. So I don't blame you on that one. But I'm just sort of, you know, I don't even know what else to say about that article. It was just so bizarre. And also the timing is like, why are you doing that now?
Again, I reference that old line from Casey Stengel in the early days of the Mets when he looked in the dugout and said, does anybody here know how to play this game?
Yeah, no, it definitely is some sort of, I don't know, but really bad politicking. And the whole sitting around with his new chief of staff and, you know, this sort of old...
Well, did you read the line about how, he was dismayed at the amount of internal discord among his staff? I read that and I thought, really? Really? You are? You've got some hardline pseudo-democratic hawks like Rahm Emanuel, and you're surprised that the people who aren't that way are sort of disillusioned with the process? Really? Really?
Well,
because I mean, I'm nothing special, but you know, I've sat on. You know, I've sat on the fundraising car wash committee and stuff down at the school, and you know it gets disillusioning there because you can't make a decision about what kind of soap to use.
No, but I mean, once again, though, you know, we're going to be held hostage by the banks. You know, people need to start going to jail now. I mean, this foreclosure stuff where they're using Walmart workers and, you know, passing off people as paralegals and lawyers and stuff. I mean, it's straight up criminal. Yet we're still hearing coddling language from the White House. The whole thing is making me feel so sick.
I remember years ago, the Harvard Lampoon, you know, they put out a publication every year that's a lampoon of some publication. And many years ago, their lampoon was of... their parody was of USA Today. And for the TV listings, one of the TV shows was Amishan Impossible, A-M-I-S-H, you know, Amish. Amishan Impossible. And the synopsis for that night's program was, once again, Lemuel and Ebenezer refuse to answer the demon telephone and thereby miss out on another mission. Well, you know, that's kind of that for the Obama administration. You know, the entire liberal, progressive, democratic infrastructure is calling. All he's got to do is pick up the damn phone. We're begging. Take the call. Is it that doesn't sound so complicated to me, does it you?
No, and also, why not, you know, just let this court ruling stand and let the issue just sort of die away, but... they got a appeal. I'm just like, wow, you know.
Well, you know, that's Eric Holder's independent independent Department of Justice. I'm sure explanation.
No, but the thing is, though, in face of look forward, not back, I'm not hearing it. You see what I'm saying? If there was some basis for believing that it was independent, then that's one thing. But we know it's not. Otherwise.
But doesn't this thing play in tandem with that Valerie Jarrett stuff that I played while I was talking to Reverbo?
Listen, speaking of that, I'm so happy, and all the other ladies are too, that Reverbo made that lifestyle choice at 15.
You're awful.
No, but that was...
You know, why don't I just mute my mic, get Reverbo back on, and let you guys finish the show?
That was hilarious. Anyway, I love that.
But you mentioned going to jail a minute ago, Sandra, and I do have to throw this out here before we're done. Remember how we were kind of celebrating the fact that that thug in Hungary had been put in the hooscow?
Well, just a whiff of that. Yeah, what happened?
Yeah, he's out.
What'd he make, bail?
No, the prosecution dismissed the charges. Or the court dismissed the charges. They decided that the prosecution did not have enough evidence to merit holding him. And there were quotes. Oh, there were quotes, Sandra, from this guy saying, "Our company has done nothing wrong." I was like, Jesus, is this guy's last name? Is this like Hungarian for Blankenship? This was a series of circumstances which we could not in any wise anticipate, and it was in fact a matter of natural forces over which we had no control. See, being Eastern European atheists, they can't say act of God. They just say act of nature over which we had no control.
Oh, Right. Well, I guess someone got paid off because that don't sound right. That's too bad. I'm disappointed. But they're hungry, and they're probably too busy having fascist marches every other day. So they've gone back to their normal pastime. You know?
I know.
It's hideous.
Avoid land wars in the Balkans. You know, it's just good sense.
God. Well, the thing is, and also I was a bit... You know, I was. Did you cringe, or was it just me when Obama was praising the chili thing? Because I'm like, yeah. And meanwhile, our miners are dead. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and the Chilean, you know, that's kind of a one off in Chile too.
Well,
you know, bless her heart, Angela Bachelet. What? She was a tremendous force for good in Chile. But, you know, that was...
The other president?
Yeah, the one who's gone. She's working for the UN now, Preston tells me.
Yeah, I know.
But still, she didn't quite get all the job done, because the reason that happened at that mine is because that was a privately owned, corporatized mine, or profitized, or whatever. There was just like there was at Upper Big Branch, there was a string of warnings. This is not safe. This is a bad place to work. Nobody had a union. They have a few hundred deaths every year in their copper and gold mines in Chile. I mean, don't get me wrong, Sandra. I am thrilled to pieces for those 33 miners and for their families. It absolutely made my heart swell with joy to see it happen. In fact, you know, some of the technology that was used was brought down from Pennsylvania.
And not only that, but it was a guy from, Colorado, who's operating the drill, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it was inspiring.
No, I understand what you're saying, because we are talking about Chile, the sort of cauldron of Chicago boys. So, no, yeah, I'm not missing what's going on there. And it's funny, though, because a lot of their copper mines are nationalized, and you're saying that this one was one of the privately held.
Right, the nationalized mines are orders of magnitude safer.
Yeah, no, I know. I mean, I'm saying even Pinochet wouldn't privatize their copper, which I thought was really interesting anyway, but that's neither here nor there. I hear what you're saying.
Oh, by the way, fan mail in from Reverbo. touche, Sandra. There's no easy road, but my heart is yours.
Oh, right, well...
I can't wait for Valentine's Day. I'm just going to be the pass-through guy.
Oh, no. You're hilarious.
Well, the show will be over soon. I'm going to go out and sit by the smoker a little bit, but I'm also going to sit and watch my Mountaineers. They've got a little bit of lead on the Florida compass point. I'm not sure. South, northeast. No, South Florida. So, you know, I got a little bit of that to do. And
Thursday, yeah.
Yeah, see, we're not a top level college football team, so we have to play on Wednesdays, Thursdays, Sundays,
right.
Tuesdays. Only upper echelon, the real major college football programs get to play exclusively on Saturday.
Well, no, but that ugly Steve Spurrier got a win. I was like, damn.
Well, wasn't that lovely?
It was funny. Yeah, it was funny. It was good.
And not just a win. I mean, it's not like they won 34-33 with time running off the clock and a fade into the end zone.
Yeah. No.
That was a full-on ass-kicking for four quarters of football.
It was a beatdown. And they still dribbling on about they're going to win the national championship. I'm like, no, you probably got another beatdown down the road there. You know what I'm saying?
You know what? Auburn may even be feeling
That's
all froggy.
All right.
And you know what? LSU's all of a sudden thinking they're somebody.
Well, we know what can, you know that can unravel, though.
Well, yeah, mainly because Les Miles is insane.
Exactly. Or, he might get some of that cough syrup, too. You never know.
Right. I mean, he's prone to forgetting the games played on a clock, you know. It's always a joy to watch an LSU game.
But they are doing pretty good. You know what I'm really kind of tired of, though, is the Boise thing. It's like, can you lose already? I'm over it.
But you know what? They ain't gonna.
Well, they're going to run the table, but their schedule sucks. I know. We'll see. You think they're going to run the table?
Yeah, I think they'll run the table.
Mm.
But then it remains...
Put them in the... No, What kind of rate? Well, they might get ratings, huh?
Here's how that plays out, Sandra. They run the table, Texas Christian runs the table, and then some bowl game pairs off Texas Christian and Boise State to sort of, you know, take them out to sleep with the fishes. That way we don't have anything messy.
Oh. Well, no, but speaking of Texas, boy, they messed up this year. Fuck. What happened?
You know, them Longhorns fans ain't going to tolerate it. Did you, by the way, one of those, this isn't really a sports story, but did you catch this story out there? I don't know how old it is, about the, some guy, without a hell of a lot of good sense, wore a university, and this is how it is, you know, for people who live in, like, sane parts of the country, understand, it's different. Dude wears a University of Texas t-shirt into a bar. In Oklahoma. I mean, just the setup lets you know it's not going to end well, doesn't it?
Yeah, what happened?
The Oklahoma fan who was a minister of the gospel wound up ripping Texas t-shirt wearing dude's scrotum open for it.
Oh, okay, listen, that's way up north. What?
You know, because, you know, we're going to kick your ass.
Oh, God, well, you know...
And Oklahoma dude says, well, that's an ass kicking I'm going to have to take in the name of Jesus. Rip.
No, remember when they had riots when that Lane Kiffin left?
Oh. No, you talking about Tennessee?
Oh, Tennessee. I'm from Oklahoma.
Yeah, different shade. Yeah, different shade of orange.
Oh, my God. Okay. But still, though, I hope there was some arrest or somebody's in jail. That's
He's pleading self-defense.
Well, no,
and you know what? And it'll have to be tried in Oklahoma. Really? You're going to take this to a jury?
He'll probably win then, right?
Win? They'll give him a medal. That's what damn Longhorns expect, come drinking in our good God-fearing Oklahoma bars.
Well, I don't know. That's horrible. I didn't know it was like that.
Well, we haven't gotten to the point yet where you have to wear, like, you know, one of those protective cups or anything to go to the bar around here, but I'm thinking about owning one.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, who's your team playing tonight?
Oh, the South Florida Bulls. It's a conference game, and they're always a tough out for us. But right now we appear to be doing okay. It's like 10-0. So Coach Luther has and his offensive coordinator Dauber have not yet figured out a way to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory.
Well, you know the Division I football we got out here, you know, Sac State, they actually doing pretty well this year, surprisingly. But UC Davis, they suck. Oh, Jesus Christ!
They're giving away the tickets.
They're bad.
Well, you know, poor old Oregon can't get any respect. I mean, that team's a machine out of the Pac-10.
Well, that team is great. They're they've been good for years now, though.
And they somehow couldn't be better than Ohio. They couldn't get Ohio State got voted number one. Yeah, please.
Yeah, but have they lost yet this year?
No. Ohio State and Oregon are both undefeated.
That's right. Okay. Well. Yeah, well, I don't know.
What they're doing is they're set. You know, that's what they want for their number one, number two national championship matchup. You know, classic Rose Bowl action.
Yeah, because Oregon will give you, you know, good value. That's a good team.
Oh yeah, and
I'm not a big Ohio. I don't know what the big deal is myself.
Well, but the big with all due respect to all my Big Ten friends, like our dear friend Guy James, the Big Ten bores me to tears. You know, every now and then they mumble a little bit about how the Mountaineers might wind up in the Big Ten when the Big East finally explodes, and I'm like, Jesus, please no.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I can't take year in and year out of watching Michigan State and Wisconsin and Indiana and Northwestern. And you know, the only fun out of it would be that we'd get Penn State once in a while.
Right.
That's an old rivalry worth having.
No, but you're right about that. That is a sort of stale conference. I mean...
And Rupert owns the network.
Oh, no. Well, Notre Dame, they kind of stumbling along, aren't they?
You know, I think that's the curse of Tyrone Willingham at work on them.
Listen, and as it should be, that, you're right, that was real sort of like, You know, they kept that Weiss there forever. He sucked big time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, he really was awful. Terrible.
And I'm not looking for that much out of Brian Kelly. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that Notre Dame is not what Notre Dame once was. And Notre Dame has not come to terms with that yet. You know, they just... Sorry.
I don't even understand.
They've got no conference. They've got no affiliations. They've basically made themselves, you know, the North Korea of college football.
And they didn't move when everyone else moved because they got all the special...
Right, they had the Notre Dame Broadcasting Company.
Yeah, and all that money. I mean, but you would think looking down the road, they might have, like, reconsidered because that gravy train can't go on if they keep being mediocre, right? Or
You don't know because it's Notre Dame. You just don't know.
Well, anyway, they're boring. They suck. USC is my favorite to watch. Damn, they got 2 years of this madness? God.
2 happy years for little Lane Kiffin.
Couldn't have to a better person.
No, not at all. Sandra, you have a wonderful weekend.
All right, bye.
Bye now. And, let's see. Nope. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston again.
Hey, Preston.
Hey, I know we just have a few minutes, but real briefly, I wanted to let you know I couldn't find my notes last night regarding that organization that came through Colorado recently that was speaking out for the mountains, Appalachian.
Oh, Appalachian Voices. Yeah, I'm looking at your note now. Yeah, they're a great group and a lot of friends of mine. There's people there, Matt and Austin and JW, and they are tremendous colleagues to have in this struggle.
Excellent. I just sitting here on the phone, I got a chance to look them up, and apparently they're actually speaking tonight here at a place called Namaste Solar, which is a solar company here in Denver, and they've also been advertising on the Progressive Talk radio station we have here. So it's kind of really cool to see them networking. And they've
been doing this road show for a lot of years now.
Okay. They got a little write-up on the Denver Post website, and there again is a good example of what a mix things can be. The Denver Post used to have a lot more writers and some good liberal editorial people, but you know, cuts. You know, some parts of the paper, you know, people are making a lot of money, but never enough. And a lot of the liberals got dismissed. And also recently, their editorial board endorsed 2 Republican candidates against 2 incumbent Democrats who are pretty good people. And the one Republican that they endorsed, a typical anti-government guy who went to college, I'm almost positive he didn't name it, but my guess is that he went to a public university and public schools, and then he went to the public military, and then he went back to school, and then he went to NSA.
And he's never been anywhere in his life that he wasn't on the public teat.
Exactly.
But he's not a socialist.
His one dip into the private sector was Raytheon. You know, completely.
You know, that really doesn't count, Preston.
I know. It was kind of a joke, definitely. I mean, completely dependent upon government buying their product that we don't want, the general public despises.
That makes brown people get all dead.
Right. And he happens to be a brown person, you know.
But he's a free market patriot.
Right.
I've read about this guy. Yeah, he's a loon.
Ryan Frazier.
Yeah.
He does have a different sort of private sector job, and I heard him being interviewed on one of the right wing talk stations, and he said, I went into the efficiencies business or something like that, or working for efficiency. And efficiency, that's code for screwing over labor. And this business that he has does a lot of outsourcing work.
Nice.
So he's so the Denver Post endorsed him. Still, there are people within the Denver Post who are doing things like this. And real quickly from their website, the write-up for the Appalachian Treasures Tour and Namaste Solar. And it says, the Appalachian region is one of the richest and yet most undervalued areas, both ecologically and culturally. It has a long history of oppression due to its wealth of natural resources. The coal industry has been laying waste to the region with little thought to the consequences. The Appalachian Treasures slideshow, with images and voices from the region, was created to bring the reality of mountaintop removal to the rest of the country. And there's a link for more, but I was just delighted.
Awesome.
To see that.
Yeah. Well, if you get a chance to go and see it, Preston, by all means, it'll be worth your gas.
You know, I wish I had known about this a little sooner, but I see they're going to be doing a couple other events, so I might be able to make something.
Well, you will meet some amazing people. I don't know who's traveling with them, but it's usually some folks from App Voices and some folks from the actual coalfield communities, and it makes for an amazing presentation.
I think Dustin White and Austin Hall. I don't know.
Yeah, Austin is a great guy. He works there at App Voices.
Excellent. Maybe I'll be able to find them on Facebook at least.
And if you can't, their website's real easy to get to. It's appvoices.org, and they're the ones who put up the I Love Mountains website that you may be familiar with.
They put in a plug for that when they were being interviewed on the radio, community radio, the other day. Yeah, that's a very well-done website for sure.
Well, Preston, I hate to do it, but I do have to roll on.
No problem.
You have a wonderful weekend. I'm going to get to my chili fixings.
Sounds good.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And that is almost the end of things this evening, but a reminder for you and a little bit of point-and-click activism for you, if you don't mind. I got a note from Kate out in Montana, and she's asking for some online activism and some point-and-click help. See, like I said, she says, women in construction was something I worked at getting started when I was working down on the Gulf in Pascagoula. The main energy of the effort went to Biloxi. However, there are over 100 low-income women from the Gulf Coast in Mississippi who are now skilled and employed as a result. So they're trying to get a grant. Voting is already underway. It goes through the 29th of October, so we need a real press. And understand, you can vote more than once. So you need to go to fndmidsouth.org. fndmidsouth.org. The letter F, the letter N, the letter D, midsouth.org. /do-gooders, do-gooders, fndmidsouth.org/do-gooders, and then go to the MS, you know, for Mississippi, go to the MS page from there, and then go through the voting process. I'm going to go do it. I've already gone and done it, and I highly encourage you to please go and do it, because this is another one of those places where with little or barely any effort at all, you can make a difference in people's lives. So please consider doing it at your earliest convenience and as frequently as possible until the 29th day of October. It's 57 and a half minutes past the hour. Sorry I won't be here tomorrow, but I'll be thinking of y'all as the cooking goes on. And like I said, I'll try to have some video or some photos or something, and it'll be fun. Because I do need a little downtime now and then. I just do. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. That starts with you who contribute to make this this process, this program possible. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com under the Contribute tab. And I think it's also elsewhere on the pages as well. We're still looking for 250 people willing to contribute $10 a month to help us reach that nifty thrifty 250 who will help me end all of these pitches. Once we get there, then I can shut up. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, to Matt Osborne at osborneinc.com, our Southeast correspondent, Reverbo, whom you heard this evening, our columnist at Cavalcade of Crazy at headonradionetwork.com. My head writer is David in Tennessee. Much of this is made possible also by the sponsorship of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org, the hardest working, bravest people I know, as well as our chief engineer, John Fox, chief webmaster, chief web designer. He's our chief. And then there's also Ben Birch at whiterosesociety.org, who literally saved Liberal Talk Radio.
starting in 2002 and continuing to this very day. WhiteRoseSociety.org, fighting the rise of the new fascism. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.